all of my life I felt that you were listening, watching for ways to help me stay true. A lot of my dreams, although confusion keeps trying to
now, welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 9th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern until midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389-POUND. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Please click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 3, verses 22 through 35. And the scribes which came down from Jerusalem said, He hath Beelzebub, and by the prince of the devils casteth he out devils. And he, Jesus, called them unto him, and said unto them in a parables, How can Satan cast out Satan? And if a kingdom be divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. And if a house be divided against itself, that house cannot stand. And if Satan rise up against himself, and he be divided, he cannot stand, but hath an end. No man can enter into the strong man's house and spoil his goods, except he will first bind the strong man, and then he will spoil his house. Truly I say unto you, all sins shall be forgiven unto the sons of men, and blasphemies, wherewith soever they shall blaspheme. But he that shall blaspheme against the Holy Ghost hath never forgiveness, but is in danger of eternal damnation, because they said, He hath an unclean spirit. There came then his brethren and his mother, and standing without, sent unto him, calling him. And the multitude sat about him, and they said unto him, Behold, thy mother and thy brethren, they seek for thee. And he answered them, saying, Who is my mother? Who is my brethren? And he looked round about on them which sat about him, and said, Behold, my mother and my brethren. For whosoever shall do the will of God, the same is my brother and my sister and my mother. Okay, Gospel of Mark. We read chapter 3, verses 21 through 35. Okay, tonight's topic, we're going to be looking at a paper that we filed. It's a short paper, I think. We just filed it recently. You get a copy of this paper on our front page, nationallibertyalliance.org. There are three filings that we did. We did another filing today. But the first filing we did, most recently this is anyway, we've done over 100 filings altogether, but now we're at the decision and order part of this process. And on August 17th, we filed a decision and order and a declaration to restore the law. Last week, we filed on September 3rd a decision and order concerning the merging of equity and law. And again, you know, we've spoken about equity and the difference between equity and law. Equity ultimately is a statutory process. It is legislative law, where law is the law, God's law ultimately. It's called common law or natural law. So we're going to read this paper, get a copy, as I said, on the front page. Another paper that we did file, again, we filed this today. We might read this paper next week. I'm not sure what we're going to look at next week yet, but it could be this paper. And we are in the process of writing another paper, which should be filed probably, hopefully next Monday, maybe. But the one we filed today was another indictment against Judge Kahn. This is the second indictment. And we also wrote a letter to the clerk of the court. This is the third, I believe the third time, could be the fourth time, but I'm not sure, I don't remember in particular, but I think it's the third time, that Judge Kahn has stuck his foot in the door of our court and tried to shut it down. We've kept on filing. They've kept on taking. And he's been pretty silent for a while, but now, again, I guess he's not happy with the latest paperwork that we filed. So anyway, he tried again to shut the court down. We did indict him again, and we served notice on the clerk concerning any removal of papers in this court of record, which doesn't operate the way they normally proceed, because today you can only open a court of equity. There is no such thing as a court of law anymore. It doesn't exist in America. Until now, we're forcing it open. Okay, so we're going to read this paper, and again, you can get a copy on the front page. Also, you can get a copy of all the papers that we have filed. You can find them up at nationallibertyalliance.org. You go to grand jury on the blue bar, far right, highlight that, and underneath the highlight, after you highlight that, you'll see underneath action against the judiciary. And on that page, again, you'll find all the papers that we've filed over the past 3 years. And, of course, also these three papers, which should be towards the top. We filed quite a bit of memorandums. We've read some of them over the past month, and I'm sure we'll continue to be looking at some of them. So let's go. We're going to first take a look at tonight's subject, again, the merging of law and equity. Acts of high treason. Wherefore, for the reasons stated herein, it is hereby ordered that the United States Supreme Court and Congress is to take action and secure the Republic on behalf of the people by removing judges in bad behavior. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. No state, legislator, or executive or judicial officer can war against the Constitution without violating his undertaking to support it. On September 19, 1796, President George Washington, in his farewell address, warned us of the enemies, foreign and domestic, working diligently through political parties already among us, holding an allegiance to the crown, nibbling at the balance of power in order to destroy our Constitution, saying, "All obstructions to the execution of the laws, or combinations and associations under whatever plausible character, with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or awe the regular deliberation and action of the constituted authorities, are destructive to this fundamental principle and of fatal tendency. They serve to organize factions, to give it an artificial and extraordinary force, to put in place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community, and according to the alternative triumphs of different parties, to make the public administrations the mirror of the ill-concerted and incongruous projects of factions rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interests. However, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends, they are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them up to unjust dominions. As avenues to foreign influence, innumerable ways, such attachments are particularly alarming to the truly enlightened and independent patriot. How many opportunities do they afford to tamper with domestic factions, to practice the arts of seduction, to mislead public opinion, to influence or awe the public councils? Such an attachment to the small or weak towards a great and powerful nation dooms the former to be the satellite of the latter. Against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, I conjure you to believe me, fellow citizens, the jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake, since history and experience proves that foreign influence is one of the most baneful foes of republican government. But that jealousy, to be useful, must be impartial, else it becomes the instrument of the very influence to be avoided, instead of a defense against it. Excessive partiality for one foreign nation and excessive dislike of another cause those whom they actuate to see danger only on one side and serve to veil and even second the arts of influence on the other. Real patriots who may resist the intrigues of the favorites are liable to become suspected and odious while its tools and dupes usurp the applause and confidence of the people to surrender their interests. I have already intimated to you the dangers of parties in the state, with particular reference to the founding of them on geographical discriminations. Let me now take a more comprehensive view and warn you in the most solemn manner against the baneful effects of the spirit of party. Generally, this spirit, unfortunately, is inseparable from our nation, having its roots in the strongest passions of the human mind. It exists under different shapes in all governments, more or less stifled, controlled, or repressed. But in those of a popular form, it is, seems, in its greatest rankness, and is truly their worst enemy. In the 18th century, British Crown Court lawyers held positions of trust, such as barrister, lawyer, and attorney, and were bestowed with the title Esquire, thereby revealing their allegiance to the Crown. These esquires had already grouped together equity and law in Britain, and were already conspiring to subvert our common law in 1776. It is because of those who swore allegiance to the Crown, holding a position of trust, title, such as gentleman or esquire, who were nibbling away at our Constitution. This is precisely why, in January 1810, Senator Reed proposed the Title of Nobility Amendment, which the Senate overwhelmingly voted to pass by a vote of 26-1, and the House resolved in the affirmative 87-3. And by December 10, 1812, 12 of the required 13 states ratified the original 1810 Amendment 13, which reads as follows: If any citizen of the United States shall accept claims, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor, or shall, without the consent of Congress, accept and retain any present, pension, office, or emolument of any kind whatsoever, from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States, and shall be incapable of holding any office of trust or profit under them, or either of them. This was done to prevent anyone who had an allegiance to the Crown from taking a political office. Both houses went even as far as stating such person shall cease to be a citizen. Today we have lawyers with the title Esquire, whereas it is their outcome-based education that they believe to be true that makes them the enemy here. Today's bar tort law attorneys unwittingly serve the status quo fiction of law, thereby being the minions of the New World Order. 150 years later, in 1961, President John F. Kennedy also sounded the alarm, saying, We are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its defenders are silent, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War, in short, with a wartime discipline no democracy could ever hope or wish to match. There is a very grave danger that announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. Acts of Treason. On December 6, 1865, the original 13th Amendment that prevented bar members from holding an office of trust just disappeared and was replaced with another 13th Amendment. On July 9, 1868, the aforesaid conspirators abrogated our unalienable rights by changing them to civil rights, calling them privileges and immunities, placing people under civil law through the 14th Amendment, stating that the people are subject to the jurisdiction. On February 21, 1871, Congress passed the District of Columbia Organic Act of 1871, which created a foreign state within a city, Washington, D.C., and delegated an elite group to manage the established territory of the United States, placing the United States under the control of enemies both foreign and domestic via the deep state. As the name suggests, the Acts of 1871 served to install a new government for the District of Columbia. The Washington, D.C. municipality is a separate international city-state like Vatican City in the inner city of London and the United Nations. It is run as a plenaria, oligarchy, by certain members of Congress who are part of the deep state, claiming their lawful authority under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. On August 21, 1878, 75 lawyers from 20 states and the District of Columbia met in Saratoga Springs, New York, to establish the American Bar Association. Since that first meeting, the American Bar Association, ABA, has played a pivotal role in the abrogation of common law in the United States. On February 3, 1913, Congress passed the unratified anti-constitutional 16th Amendment that enslaved the people, called the Federal Reserve Act, which gave complete control of the dollar to the foreign bankers, enslaved the people with unlawful direct tax, called income tax, and subjected the people to the unlawful debtor's prison. Today, the 1913 dollar is worth about 4 cents. On April 8, 1913, Congress passed the unratified anti-constitutional 17th Amendment that removed the state's right of suffrage through the Senate, thereby removing the state's sovereignty. On July 22, 1944, at the Bretton Woods Agreement Conference, the United States totally surrendered its sovereignty to the banking forces by forcing the nations of the world to accept the dictates of the centralized banking system. On December 29, 1945, Congress enacted the International Organizations Immunity Act that relinquished every public office in the United States to the United Nations, and established a special group of foreign or international organization whose members could work in the U.S. and enjoy certain exemptions from U.S. taxes and certain seizure laws. On July 26, 1947, the CIA, and on September 18, the NSA, became operational, which marked the birth of the National Police Surveillance Grid. Today, the CIA is a private corporation which operates as a prostitute for global bankers' interests and does not represent the United States. On December 10, 1948, the creation of the United Nations on American soil marked the beginning of the end of political sovereignty in the United States. On September 21, 1950, the 81st Congress released the report of National Lawyers Guild and determined that the Bar Association was founded and run by communists. Thus, all elected or appointed officials, that the members of the bar are true believers in its teaching of subversion. On September 11, 2001, the National Police State Surveillance Grid reached maturity. This event created the Department of Homeland Security, TSA, and FEMA, under the guise of national security, which during a national emergency controls every resource, every asset, and even our freedom. It also creates created the Patriot Act, and now today virtually every communications that we engage in is monitored. On September 25th, 2013, John Kerry, without the approval of the Senate, signed the United Nations Arms Treaty, which will eventually attempt to eliminate the Second Amendment and private property rights in America through the United Nations Socialist Agenda 21 program that is spreading across America. These ABA subverts have flooded our courts and polluted our Constitution with about 230 years of repugnant acts, statutes, and rules. All of the aforesaid destructive acts, along with many, many more, were possible because the federal government that centralized our education has removed civics, constitutional studies, and true American history from our curriculum, replacing it with an outcome-based socialist education. Federal Rules of Civil Procedure merged equity and common law, which is the act of treason. Civil action. According to the Federal Judicial Center, a government agency on September 16, 1938, pursuant to its fictional authority under the Repugnant Rules Enabling Act of 1934, the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits in common law were grouped together under the term civil action. This was an act of treason. Whereas the United States Supreme Court and Congress, under the teaching and guidance of the treacherous, subversive American Bar Association, in an act of treason, a silent coup, abrogated common law, hereinafter natural law, with its unalienable rights that were endowed by our Creator, and covertly substituted them with civil rights legislated by lawless men, thereby claiming the people to be subject to the repugnant statutes and codes that provided for our servants to take over our house, appointing themselves the sovereign masters and the people their pawns. The Federal Judicial Center is the research and educational agency of the judicial branch of the United States government. The center supports the efficient, effective administration of justice and judicial independence. Its status as a separate agency within the judicial branch, its specific missions, and its specialized expertise enable it to pursue and encourage critical and careful examinations of ways to improve judicial administration. The center has no policymaking or enforcement authority. Its role is to provide accurate, objective information and education to encourage through and candid analysis of policies, practices, and procedures. Treason. On September 21, 1950, the Committee on Un-American Activities, House Resolution No. 5, 79th Congress, First Session, concluded that the National Lawyers Guild is the foremost legal bulwark of the Communist Party, its front organizations, and controlled unions. Since its inception, it has never failed to rally to the legal defense of the Communist Party and individual members thereof, including known espionage agents. It has constantly fought against national, state, and local legislation aimed at curbing the communist conspiracy. It has been most articulate in its attack upon all agencies of the government seeking to expose or prosecute the subversive activities of the Communist Network, including national, state, and local investigative committees. The Department of Justice, the FBI, and law enforcement agents generally. Through its affiliation with the International Association of Democratic Lawyers, an international communist front organization, the National Lawyers Guild has constituted itself as an agent of a foreign principle hostile to the interests of the United States. It has gone far afield to oppose the foreign policies of the United States in line with the current line of the Soviet Union. Destruction of our heritage. The American Bar Association teaches that common law is the body of law derived from judicial decisions rather than from statutes or constitutions, thereby defining the characteristics of common law as precedent. In cases where the parties disagree on what the law is, a common law court looks to past precedents, decisions of relevant courts, and synthesizes the principles of those past cases as applicable to the current facts. If a similar dispute has been resolved in the past, the court is usually bound to follow the reasoning used in the prior decision, a principle known as stare decisis, thereby concluding that common law, as the body of law made by judges, stand in contrast to and on equal footing with statutes adopted through the legislative process. Under this abominable interpretation of law taught in law schools, it logically followed that the merging of equity, statutes, and common law, stare decisis, makes sense. This outcome-based education created swarms of minions of the New World Order, unwitting, useful idiots sent to eat out our substance and destroy our heritage. America was founded upon eight self-evident ancient principles, biblical principles, that Thomas Jefferson discovered. Herein is our birthright. We the people, upon the signing of the Declaratory Covenant, placed us under God's law, made with Abba God in 1776, via his blessings of liberty, holding these truths to be self-evident. That God entitled us to live under the laws of nature's God, not socialist legislators and equity judges. That all men are created equal. That they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, not civil rights. That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, not vice versa, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, not vice versa. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. Therefore, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing perpetually upon our liberty, revealing a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is our right, it is our duty to throw off such government and to provide new gods for our future security. Today, out of a total of 435 U.S. representatives and 100 senators, 535 total in Congress, lawyers comprise the biggest voting bloc of our type, making up 43% of Congress, 60% of the U.S. senators is lawyers. And according to the Washingtonian, there are 80,000 lawyers working in Washington, D.C. to maintain the status quo. The bar has convinced the populace that the United States is a democracy, which is a stepping stone to totalitarianism, and that by orchestrating popular demand through fear is then able to legislate statutes that abrogate the unalienable rights of the sovereign people. Democracy and totalitarianism are types of governments that offer different ways of making decisions on behalf of the people they govern. They share some similarities, but at the end of the day yield the same results. While the latter focuses on oppression, the former embraces the differences of the people until egotistical tyrants seize control and over time convince the sheeple to vote away their liberties as it morphs into totalitarian. As John Adams commented, democracy never lasts. It soon wastes away, exhausts, and murders itself. With all these New World Order minions nibbling at every legislative word and judicial meeting, they turned and continue to turn our courts of justice into courts of thieves. They send out swarms of police that operate as code enforcement officers. They fine or imprison the people for behavior that they deem a crime or for not having a license to exercise our unalienable rights. They tax our homes, our labor, and even in death they tax our children's inheritance. They ignore our laws. They change our unalienable rights to civil rights. They changed our common law to legislative law. They spack and taint our juries. They remove the knowledge of our sacred foundation from our education. They claim government by consent is the ballot box. They expand their jurisdictions and powers. They remove our power to recall. They imprison us in statutory prisons to control the will of the people. They rob our states of their sovereignty and subject them to the will of the federal government. They enslave the people, treating them as chattel, and create debtors' prisons. They interpret law according to their own will when they should be administering justice, and they claim that we are a democracy and not a republic. Thomas Jefferson wrote concerning the overreaching authority of judges, where he said, "The germ of dissolution of our federal government is in the federal judiciary, an irresponsible body working like gravity by night and by day, gaining a little today and a little tomorrow, and advancing its noiseless steps like a thief over the field of jurisdiction until all shall be usurped from the states. The Constitution is a mere thing of wax in the hands of the judiciary, which they may twist and shape into any form they please. The opinion which gives to the judges the right to decide what laws are constitutional and what not only for themselves in their own sphere of action, but for the legislature and the executive also, in their spheres, would make the judiciary a despotic branch. To consider the judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions is a very dangerous doctrine indeed, and one which would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy. Our judges are as honest as other men and not more, so and in their power is more dangerous, as they are in office for life and are not responsible, as the other functionaries are, to the elective control. The Constitution has erected no such single tribunal, knowing that to whatever hands confided with corruptions of time and party, its members would become despots. Thomas Jefferson said, "The two enemies of the people are criminals and government. So let us tie the second down with the chains of the Constitution, so the second will not become the legalized version of the first." The American Bar Association became guilty of treason when they advocated the overthrow of our government by willfully advocating, abetting, advising, and teaching repugnant statutes as law designed to enslave the people of the states in order to overthrow federal and state governments under 18 U.S.C. 23885. Where we read, "Whoever organizes or helps to attempt to organize any social group or assembly of person who teaches to advocate or encourage the overthrow or destruction of any such government by force or violence, or becomes or is a member of or affiliates with any such society, group, or assembly of persons knowingly for the purpose thereof, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both." As used in this section, the term organizes and organize with respect to any society, group, or assembly of persons include the recruiting of new members, the forming of a new units, and the regrouping or expansion of existing clubs, classes, and other units of such society, groups, or assembly of persons. The Solution, Kentucky Resolutions, a series of resolutions drawn up by Jefferson and adopted by the legislature of Kentucky in 1799, protesting against the aliens and sedition laws, declaring their illegality, announcing the strict constitutionalist theory of the federal government, and declaring nullification to be the rightful remedy. We the people have the power to nullify all these unconstitutional repugnant acts simply through self-education and taking control of the judiciary via the jury. Marbury versus Madison. All laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Miranda versus Arizona. Where rights secured by the constitutions are involved, there can be no rule-making or legislation which would abrogate them. Ordered that the United States Supreme Court, Congress, both the House and Senate, is to obey the law of the land as understood by the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers. We the people hereby nullify all construction of law that claims common law, also known as natural law, and their respective courts of record abrogated. Any clerk or judge that continues in the repugnant practice of concealing natural law courts and charges a statutory fee for justice is guilty of treason. It is so ordered, dated September 3, 2019, signed, Grand Jury Foreman. Okay. Jen, do we have any announcements? Jen, you're probably muted.
Yes, we're ready for this next mailing. It's going to be 5 pages. I have some volunteers already. I need about 110-120 more volunteers to finish this mailing. And the other two have gone out smoothly.
The weight of that is this mailing coming up is just is 1 ounce exactly. So it's one stamp is the cost to mail it, and of course the envelope. And I believe it's 5 pages that needs to be, printed out and put into the envelope.
Right.
So go ahead, Jim.
Yep, just 5 pages. Something easily done. And that's about the only announcement for this evening. I have one question for this evening.
And before we get to the question, we're going to be mailing probably every week or every 2 weeks, as often as we can. There'll be short papers. They'll be going in regular envelopes. It should never go over 2 stamps. Generally, it'll be 1 stamp. We'll try to keep it down to 5 pages. It seems that 5 papers is 1 ounce, and we can go to 10 pages to get us to just under 2 ounces. And so we'll probably, we'll probably never go over 10 or 11 pages. And I think that should keep us both, in both cases, under the 2 ounce mark or just at the 2 ounce mark. I guess the envelope is included in 5 pages, and then another 5 pages, or let's say maybe even 6. But we're going to try to be doing mailings every week. We're also going to be joining cases. Our next paper that we're going to be working on, we hope to get it out by next Monday, and that is probably the paper we'll take a look at next Monday, should we be able to accomplish that. But if it doesn't go out by next Monday, it'll definitely go out sometime that week, next week. Let me see what else before we take questions. We're going to be moving the gun case of New York. We're going to join that into this case also, and we'll be making decisions. And people need to understand what exactly we're doing here. We opened up a court of record. We created our own form, which looks very much like their form, but it's a common law form. which clearly opens up and creates a court of record. The next paper we're writing is going to be much more clarified, much better. I think it's going to clarify it much better, and I think that's going to be the main focus. The fact of the matter, they had no power or authority to abrogate the common law. And we're going to make this very clear, I think. And so that'll be our next paper that we will be filing. But that's exactly what they did. So we opened up a common law. People have forgotten, a common law court, people have forgotten what that means. It means that the people control the court. We don't get a guy with a black cape and a hammer, you know, telling us what the law is. So it's the people who decide what the law is. That's what a court of law is. It's 12 individuals, a jury, who rule on the facts and decide what is law and what is not law. And they can nullify any law. They can nullify any law just for that case. If they don't think it's just concerning, you know, so when they consider the facts and they look at the law and they don't think that that law is just and with these facts, they can nullify it. And the only time law can be applied upon the people is when the people are involved in some kind of an activity, a commercial activity, for instance, or some political activity. And those are pretty much the two basic activities that take place where we've given Congress the authority to write law. But we never gave them the authority to write law to control we the people. We never gave them the authority to write law to control our behaviors in any way. We refer to law. And the word law, in law, at law, in Black's Law Dictionary and Bouvier's Dictionary, always refers to the common law, which is natural law, which means no political people involved. You always have the sheriff, of course, is supposed to be in the courtroom, a deputy, and to maintain any lawful order and carry out any executions of law. And the other individual that would be in the courtroom working for the government would be a magistrate. A magistrate is not a judge. A magistrate is an administrator. He is to administrate the will of the jury, the 12 individuals judging. The tribunal is the 12 individuals, is the people. Totally disconnected from any connection in any way, shape, or form from the government. That's the process that our founding fathers set up. That is our heritage. That secures our liberty. We have unalienable rights. The government cannot choose to decide what rights we have or don't have. The government cannot alter our Bill of Rights, nor can alter or change any unalienable right that we find and have. It doesn't have the power or the authority to take away the sovereignty of the state and make it make states to act according to their will. But they've done that. They've done that through the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment is null and void. If only the people realize and understand that. We've informed back about a year ago, and we're going to do it again soon, but at least a year ago, we filed papers with all 50 governors, and we notified them of the damages done by the 17th Amendment and the fact that it is not law. It was never ratified, number one. It's repugnant to the Constitution itself, number two. It upset the entire structure of power of the Constitution. There is a balance of power in the Constitution between the states, the three branches of government, and the people. There is a balance between all of those entities. And that 17th Amendment and the 16th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, all three repugnant to the Constitution, destroyed that balance of power. And the people are ignorant to this. We need to expand the knowledge of the people. We need to bring this knowledge to the people, to understand what their heritage is, what their unalienable rights are. People are oblivious to this. They don't really realize how severely damaged our Constitution has become because of lawyers, because of bar attorneys. And it's not that the lawyers are bad, because most of our founding fathers were lawyers. Thomas Jefferson was a lawyer, and many of our founding fathers was a lawyer. But they were not bar attorneys. They were not taught by some group who had a hidden agenda, particularly the agenda that was hidden in Britain and again now in America in 1938 particularly, or 34 actually, and I think it was 38 when they really enforced it. But the whole process was to destroy common law, to bring together common law, calling common law, you know, past court decisions, also referred to as precedences, okay? They make, that's what they say, a common law is precedence by some decision of some trial judge, and also, of course, the appellate courts and the United States Supreme Courts. That's what they're calling common law. And they have no idea, no knowledge, no experience, no reference to the natural law. And again, it's their enemy, and of course they are common law's enemy. But they've destroyed us. They destroyed our heritage. The people have lost their heritage. And until you start listing these things out, you know, the things that they've done, the Rules Enabling Act, the United Nations, the Lawyers Guild, Homeland Security, and all of these things, the ABA, the Organic Act, the 14th Amendment, the 13th Amendment, destruction of the 14th Amendment, the 16th Amendment, the 17th Amendment. And until you start looking at this point by point, you just don't realize how severe it is. You know, that old proverbial story, you know, of the boiling water and the, I think it's what, it's the frog in the boiling water, and it boils to death before it realizes that it's in boiling water. It slowly raises. Of course, it's not necessarily true. It's just a story. But the point is that's where we're at. The water is boiling, and we don't even realize it's being boiled alive. We're being destroyed, our country, our nation, our way of life, our liberty, our heritage has been destroyed. People need to come to an understanding of these things, and then, of course, we need to step up and get behind this case, because we're going to be relentless. You know, we have filed this, of course, against, this was filed against the United States Supreme Court, both houses of Congress, and the federal judiciary. And we have filed it also, a copy, the President of the United States and William Barr, the Attorney General. We have indicted, I need to take account, I keep saying this, and I never get around to doing this, but we need to take account of how many federal judges we've indicted. We've indicted quite a few of them. We've also indicted the state judges. We've indicted the judge who tried to take control of our court. We've indicted him twice. This is the second indictment just went in today. And this one was treason. And we're going to continue to indict. And we will, if necessary, indict the United States Supreme Court judges. They are not above the law. They are creatures of the law. The law created them, their positions. We, the people, were created by God. We have unalienable rights. We vested them with rights. And so we gifted them with rights, and we can take their rights away. They are not above the law. Again, they are creatures of the law. They are created by the law, created by we the people who ordained and established that law. So we've given it to them. We can take it away from them. The Constitution is clear of that power. The Declaration of Independence is clear of that power. And even the Bill of Rights is clear of that power. The people need to come to an understanding and knowledge of that power and step up and take that power to take back control of our nation, of our courts, of our political process, and reestablish our heritage for ourselves and our posterity. That's what we have to do. And if we fail to do it, woe is us. And if we fail to do it, we deserve everything we get. The people who have an understanding of this knowledge, the people who are waking up to this knowledge and fail to step up and do something, deserve everything they do get from not reacting. And unfortunately, those who are reacting will suffer the same consequences that they are going to suffer because of their non-reaction. Okay, where do we go from here? Jen, I guess we have a question or something? Only one?
Yes, we have a question. How can one successfully enforce a private administrative process against a public official?
How can what? Say it again.
How can one successfully enforce a private administrative process against a public official?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how they're meaning that, but generally speaking, what I think they're saying is pretty much what we're doing right now. It takes the people. It takes the people to wake up, to understand the power and authority, to understand that we are not creatures of the law. We are created by God and are above the law, save the law of God, of course. That's natural law. All things are under natural law. By natural law, we have been vested by God in order to have government by consent, one according to the will of the people, one who answers to the law of God, which, again, God has written his law in the hearts of men. Very simple. You know, do no harm. It really just says it all. Do no harm. You harm something or somebody, and you have to pay that consequence. You know, for every injury, there must be a remedy in common law. So what we're doing right now is to bring, this government, the administrations of law, you know, of whether it be legislative, judicial, or even the administrator being the president, to bring them back under the law. You know, if Donald Trump did not accomplish the things that he's been accomplishing, if he never became president and the other side won, we would have no chance of exercising the things we are. You know, being naive, not totally naive, understanding the destruction of the New World Order, understanding how vast they are and how strong they are, how powerful they are, how deep they go. I never really understood how deep they really went. I always knew they didn't go deep. But we never could have unrooted them. We never could have overtaken them. We never could have destroyed them. And we're in the process of doing that, unless someone like Donald Trump became president, because he has taken out the deep state. He is, you know, draining the swamp, every day, we see more and more activities concerning the law being applied. I want to see a lot of people going to jail. A lot of people still don't have the faith that all these people that are above the law and have been above the law for many, many years are no longer going to be permitted to be above the law. And they're going to pay the consequence. Because we can't have, and Donald Trump knows this, we can't have half of justice. Justice does not come in portions. Either have justice or you don't. We cannot have half of a right. Rights don't come in portions. We either have unalienable rights or we have none. And Donald Trump knows this. We can't have these people, to put justice upon some of them, but not all of them. They all have to pay, and they have to pay to the fullest extent of whatever the crime it is that they've exercised and placed those burdens upon us. They have to pay the full price. Donald Trump knows this. I'm convinced of this. And those who are awakened know this. And it's only a matter of hitting that critical mass. You know, we're approaching 8,000 members here with National Liberty Alliance, but we need 80,000. We need that critical mass. Critical mass will come at some point in time. And when that critical mass comes, combined with the work that Trump is doing, and I think by the time we get through the fall, you know, the hearings will begin. America will be shocked to its core and go on behind the scenes. They will find it difficult to believe and comprehend the depthness of the evil that has been hidden behind our government by people who we thought we can trust, people who we thought were one thing, and they're monsters. All of this is going to be revealed before the end of the year. It must be revealed by the end of the year. Next year is an election year, and it's got to be done this year. I don't see any way of getting away from that. Even if, of course, the court cases will run into next year, but they got to be moving in full bore before this year is out. And the last I heard, that anticipation is during this fall. Barr is going to drop the hammer this fall. By the time the fall is out, again, America is going to be shocked to its core. Many of us who have been acclimated to this evil to some degree by having the knowledge and understanding of what's going on, of course, we've already been shocked. Anybody who's woken up has gone through a shock to realize that reality is not the way you perceived it, that it's all propaganda, it's all fake news, it's all BS, it's not true. And so we're waking up, and we've woken up to that, and the American people have got to wake up to that, and they will. And then it's going to be horrific. But at the other end of this thing, it'll be terrific. Again, this, what we are doing here today, in combination of those facts, is what's going to accomplish, assist us or provide for us to be able to accomplish the goal that we're looking to achieve. And that goal is to have government by consent. And government by consent is by the people, we the people, having 100%, not 99.9, 100% control of our judicial process. We have given them control of equity, and we are to monitor them in equity, and we can overrule them in a court of law, any of their misconstruction of equity. But the key is that the common law courts, which require the people to judge the people and to be primed with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy in that exercising of that right as a jurist. Only that is law. That's where we have to bring ourselves, our minds, our state of mind, and understanding of that, and start exercising, because then we will have total control of the justice of this country. Then, just bear in mind, you listen to all these things that's going on, you listen to these conversations, and, oh, they're not going to indict, bar has to do this, or this one has to do that. To hell with all that. If the people are in charge, we just get up and indict, and they have to answer. That's fear of the people. That's control of government. That is government by consent. And on the other side of the coin is the political process, you know. We read here in today's paper what Washington had to say concerning the parties and the political process and the problem. It's going to be our downfall. We're going to be destroyed by it. They've seized control of the engines that lifted them up to the power that they have. And Jefferson, on the other side, said it's going to be the courts that's going to destroy us. It's going to be the courts that's going to be the dictators of our lives. And so it has been. And also with Jefferson, with Washington, so it has also. We are divided constantly. We have all this politicking going on. Washington said, do away with that. Stop that. Even Jefferson was on that idea of just stopping these political parties. But it's gone out of control. And these people are paid by special interest groups to do their will. The people elect them from our, districts, congressional districts or whatever districts, of other people elected. But let's talk about Washington. We, the people, elect these individuals out of our congressional districts to go do the will of the people of the congressional districts, and they go and prostitute themselves to all these special interest groups, taking money, doing their will and not ours. That could never happen if we have government by consent. If we control the courts, we will not permit that to happen. We will indict. These people are taking bribes. We'll call it what it is. It's a bribe. It's nothing else but a bribe. So we can control that from the political side, and on the judicial side. And on the political side, the power to recall. Right now it's a top-down organization. It's called the Committee Men. They control the political process. It's top down. They have held control many, many years now. We intend on taking it back. And when we take it back, it will go back into the hands of the grassroots, and the people will decide exactly the way it's supposed to be. Government by consent. If you're not a statesman, we're not going to help you we're not going to get you onto the ticket. If you don't understand the Constitution, and you can't answer our constitutional questions, we're not going to put you on the ticket. And if you do pass those tests that we put upon you and you do get into office and you do something that we tell you not to do, we'll inform you of that, not to do it. And if they continue to do it, we'll recall them. We're going to yank anybody out of office within 90 days through the power of recall. Or we can knock them out of office immediately with the power of indictment to the grand jury. This is government by consent. This is what we, the people, need to learn and understand and exercise. And that is the purpose of National Liberty Alliance, to empower the people in the grassroots level to exercise their authority and their power that they cannot exercise without the education, the knowledge of how to do it, what that power is. We have total control if we take it. Woe is us if we don't. Okay, anything else, Jan?
No, that's all I had for this evening, John.
Okay, so no more announcements and no more questions. As I mentioned, the New York lawsuit against the New York SAFE Act, which was a it was done in the federal courts. They did the same thing they do always do. They just refuse to speak, silence us, and throw us out. But we're moving that into our court case. And we will move case after case after case after case of the people that want to join and join in our case. And we will make decisions. And we will put out orders. And we will file them with the courts. And we will file them with the Attorney General Barr. And we will continue to indict judge after judge. If we have to indict every judge in America to accomplish the goal, so be it. The people have to have the will to do it. They have to have the knowledge and then the will to do it. Either we live under this tyranny or we take it back. And remember this one thing, okay? Donald Trump, he's got that slogan, let's make America great again. And indeed he is making America great again. And I believe by the end of his 8 years, America will be great again. We're already becoming great again. I can't even believe the economy, even though we know behind the scenes there's some serious problems going to go on, is going to be a collapse to some degree, but I believe Donald Trump has a plan to make it a soft landing and to really, you know, transition from this funny money to real money. I mean, that's a big, big chore. I have no idea how to accomplish that. I never study economics, so I have no knowledge of those things. But I do trust that Trump can do that. But with all that said and done, he can refix our economy. He can drain the swamp. He can bring all these people to justice. He can bring back the law and focus in on the Constitution. But if the people don't step up to take control of government, government by consent, only a matter of time, and we'll be back here again some years down the road. And it won't be long, because when that swamp is drained, there's going to be a power void, and the people have to fill that void. And if we don't, they will. We need to take back control of the courts. We need to get rid of all of these minions of the New World Order. But we need to shut down the American Bar Association. Yeah, they do need an education, and a proper education for lawyers should be there. But nothing, it cannot be the bar, because the bar has been tainted from the beginning. The bar, the American Bar Association, is only an extension of the British Bar Association. No difference. It was created underneath that influence and by those powers and authorities. They're the ones that created it here in America. They've been influencing our law and our government from day one, right back into 1776 and before that. They've been involved, sticking their fingers in the gears, destroying the potential of liberty, silence, putting out the flame of liberty. But again, it's the people. We got to do it. We got to get the word out. And, I need to go on as many radio interviews as possible and any programs, get out there to YouTube. There's a lot of, YouTube, X22. Again, X22 report, anybody who wants to really understand what is going on, you need to be listening to the X22 report. And also, I think also the Black Conservative Patriot, BC, B, BCP, yeah, Black Conservative Patriot. Those are the two places that you really want to get your news from. And especially if you don't have time and you don't have time to listen to a lot of news, well, listen to at least X22 report. They're probably 30 minutes to maximum. I don't think he ever goes over an hour. Plus, he does a lot of great interviews. We need to be interviewed on X22 report. Someone needs to make contact with the guy with the X22 report, make him aware of us, have him take a look at some of the things we're doing, and I am sure that they will interview us. Same thing with Black Conservative Patriot. Again, also, we need to be interviewed by them and many, many other YouTube channels that have large memberships, and any radio, internet, or whatever we need to get in and interviewed by. So everybody should be trying to reach out to any place they can think of, making the connection, getting the people interest in interviewing us and looking to see what we're doing and passing that information over to Jan. And then Jan will set up the necessary arrangements for scheduling me to have an interview concerning what it is that we're doing. That's how we're going to get critical mass. Now is the time for that. Now is the time for everyone to get involved and get the word out. Also, bring more people to our into our fold here. Make people aware of National Liberty Alliance, just the regular grassroots people. You know, introduce them to National Liberty Alliance. Get them involved. Get them to listen to some of our programming and read the papers and see the court case. And get them involved. We need to reach critical mass. We are poised for critical mass. We're prepared to be able to receive critical mass. We have created the necessary education. It's almost complete. Well, we have plenty of education here to prepare the people, to enlighten the people. And we're ready for it. The timing is right. But it's up to the people. Only the people can save America. One person can't do it. Donald Trump can't do it. I can't do it. No one individual can do it. No one handful of people can do it. Only the people can do it. And as Jefferson has said, I'm pretty sure I looked this one up because I thought it was Benjamin Franklin, but I believe it turned out to be Jefferson, who said, we don't have government by majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And that's a big difference. You know, our plan to take over the judiciary is about 15,000 people across America. We have 7,000 already. We have to, a lot of these 7,000 people, you know, we have to spark them up and wake them up off their rear ends, but nevertheless, and get them moving. But like any other organization, we have lumps on a log. And we need to massage those lumps and get them moving. And on the other side of the things, we need about 15,000 people to take control of the political process. So we're looking at a need of about 30,000 people. You know, one of these places like YouTube channels, for instance, X22 Report and Black Conservative Patriot, and others, okay, they got quite a big membership, a couple of hundred thousand. I think X22 has hundreds of thousands, well, close to 200,000, you know, if you look at the membership that have signed up with them. Our message out to them, to those two groups alone, could be enough to suffice the necessity we need to reach that critical mass. So again, we need to get the word out, not just to those two groups, but to many groups. The Patriot Soapbox, that we were on there one time, and in the course of a week after that, we pulled in 100 people, which was a pretty good amount of people within a week's time. And so we need to get back onto that particular channel again, because you know, we have people who are involved, who are looking to do something. And when they hear our message, it snaps. That's it. That's it. That's how we do it. Government by consent. It's already laid out for us. Our founding fathers already prepared all that for us. Okay? All we have to do is pick it up, take control, learn of it, and exercise it. So, pretty simple, really. And lore is exciting. History is exciting. It could be boring. Believe me, I know. I fall asleep all the time. I never can get through half of the things I approach to read. But when we get to American history, real American history, not fake American history, we get into lore, real lore, not fake lore. It is so exciting. You can't get enough of it. Why? Because it empowers you. It enlightens you. It empowers you. And it's just exciting. And you see light at the end of the tunnel, finally, where we, the people, can have control of our own destiny, where we can get rid of all these tyrants. But that does require a bent knee to the Creator, because that's what we, the people, were founded upon, as far as the Declaration of Independence being a covenant with God. And in return, to live under His laws, just like the Jews. Go back 1600 B.C. or 1500 B.C., the Jews came and lived under God's law, were happy to do so, and in return received the blessings of God. And what are those blessings of God? Go open up your Constitution and read the preamble, and this is the blessings of God. Okay, let me open this up and let me read this, and then I'm going to shut up for a while. Here's the preamble. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, remember the union we had of the 13 colonies, which became the 13 states, was not a very good, it was a good union, but this was a more perfect union. In order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, that's to live under God. The only justice is possible is God's law, not man's law. You can't find a place where there's legislative law that will bring you justice. Doesn't exist anywhere on this planet. I know, I've looked for it. I forget the number, but I think it's something like 52 different courts. 52 different courts, that, in other words, jurisdictions inside of Black's law. Okay? And in our courts alone, you know, we have established 57 jurisdictions. There are 57 codes out there, U.S. codes. That's on a federal level alone. All legislative law. All took for the purpose of controlling government and commercial activities, but never intended, at least not here in America, to control men. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure the domestic tranquility. Okay, the six reasons for government. If they're not accomplishing one of these six reasons, then they're not accomplishing and they're not holding up the Constitution. Ensure the domestic tranquility. Provide for the common defense. Promote the general welfare. And secure liberty? No. Secure the blessings of liberty. How do you secure the blessings of liberty? The only way you can secure the blessings of liberty is if you live under God's law. And that's what law is, where 12 people decide what is right and wrong. We must return to that. And we accept everyone. We accept the people who are atheists, Jews, Christians, of course, any Eastern culture, any religion you want, or lack of religion thereof. If the people are happy to live under our laws just the way it was when the Jews of Israel were, you know, being established back 1,500 years ago through Mosaic law, many, many people lived with the Jews and were happy to do so. It was a very rewarding place, a rewarding government to live under. Because we duplicated the United States of America by Israel. And I don't know if anybody heard Pence's speech this past week. I think it was this week. I heard it this past week, so I guess he did it this week. And it was about the Jews and Israel. And it really rang a bell with me when he was talking. And I don't know if he really understood how much he was really saying. You know, we owe a lot to Israel. We owe our existence to Israel because we became a nation designed just like Israel. Self-governance, everything comes from that. Unalienable rights, all of it comes from that. Go back into the first five books of the Bible. secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And here is the key. Here is one of the blessings of liberty. Do ordain who? We the people do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So we the people are the sovereigns. We created the law. Government is to live under our law. We're not to live under their law. They've turned the tables around. We've lost our heritage. We've been robbed. We need to call a cop. And he's in Washington right now. Now it's up to the people to get up and to be the sheriffs and to get out there and take this back. It's up to us. Okay, is Brent here? I know he was traveling for a while, but I think he's back.
I'm here.
Okay, so we're going to move over to Brent. Okay, Brent is the author of the book, The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. And Brent teaches us something every week. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you, John. Well, it's good to keep in mind, ponder this, that Jesus Christ did not say, depart from me, ye who practice law. He didn't say, depart from me, ye who practice law. He said, depart from me, ye who practice lawlessness. And if there are those claiming to practice law that are practicing lawlessness, well, that's a bad deal, of course. But those two things are important to remember and compare them together and then decide which camp you fall into. Those that practice law or those that practice lawlessness. Well, we were going through the Constitution of the United States clause by clause and blow by blow, and we're now up to Article 1, and we're at Section 10, Clause 1. My comments are my own, may or may not. Well, they aren't the comments of National Liberty Alliance. They're just me. So I'm going through, when I go through the Constitution and the Declaration of 76, I'm going through the book called The Declaration of 76 and the Constitution, A Common Lawyer Comments. Yours truly says a few words about each one of the clauses. We're in that clause called Section 10, Clause 1. Let me read what it says here about the laws of contracts. It says that no state shall compare the obligation of contracts. No state, that's in our Constitution, doesn't say the federal government shall not impair the obligation of contracts. No, it says no state. Well, why didn't it say the federal government? The general government shall not impair the obligation of contracts. Well, because the federal government has exclusive power or exclusive bankruptcy jurisdiction. And that's what bankruptcy is. Bankruptcy is setting aside or otherwise impairing contract obligations. When you go into bankruptcy, you're seeking protection from debt collectors. And that means you're asking the bankruptcy court, the federal court, to impair or otherwise set aside your obligation of contract. And that's good Bible. Bankruptcy is available to us. And just as Joseph Story said, that if that were not true, that we would be a disgrace to all of Christendom, and we would revert to the ugliest practices of paganism. Why did he say that? Well, he said that because the Bible has its form of bankruptcy in the law of the first five books of the Bible, and the principle of it then, of course, pertains to all of the Bible from front to back, cover to cover, and lid to lid, and still pertains today. To not allow somebody to get out from under the, to bar them from getting out from under the crushing weight of unpayable debt is evil, because God, our maker, and his law recognizes this, recognizes that we live in an evil, twisted world. Man is fallen. That means that his depravity is total. Every individual. There's no corrupting men. Men are corrupt, says the Bible. And it says it unambiguously and clearly. Since the Garden of Eden, we have been corrupted. Therefore, the law becomes important to us. And the true lawgiver, God himself, has given law so that we will be able to live decent lives in a cruel, twisted world where we all are wound up and bound up in our own whims and difficulties, to the point that if there wasn't a common objective standard among us to govern our relationships, you think it's bad now, it'd be a whole lot worse. The only remedy, we can say again here at this juncture, the only remedy to the lawlessness you see about you is true law. Not just any law, not just some rules, but rules from the true lawgiver. And we're going through the Constitution of the United States, and you say, well, that's not the Bible. No, that's not the Bible. It doesn't rise to that level. But it is an expression of what we call our common law. Our Declaration of 76 calls it the laws of nature, unwritten, lex non scripta. William Blackstone makes that observation in his commentaries. Lex non scripta, that's our common law, the law unwritten. It's the way things are, and they're meant to be observed. The laws of the creation, the laws of relationships between persons and persons, persons and things, and the relationships between things and things. That's what law is. Law is the way things are, and they will not change. They will not change under any circumstances. And the only way they can, well, they won't change, they can be suspended. The lawgiver himself has jurisdiction to suspend his laws of nature if he wants to for a time, and there have been times he has done that. We have the records of it, but if, don't count on it happening. I mean, the sun's going to come up tomorrow morning. I would lay money on it. I don't think that it's probable that the lawgiver will suspend the sun coming up. As a matter of fact, he's promised, and his promises, by the way, are law because he's the true lawgiver. He has promised that the time and the seasons will continue until the world, as we understand it, is burned up with fervent heat, to quote Peter the Apostle. But let's get to this thing about obligation of contracts. No state shall impair obligation of contracts. Well, the federal government does have that, the federal courts, the federal judiciary has that authority. The Constitution of the United States grants it to them. No state has authority to hear bankruptcy cases. No state court has authority in America to hear a bankruptcy case. Why is that? Well, if that were true, the state courts had jurisdiction to hear bankruptcy cases. If I went into my home state and I said, look, I owe this fellow over in Arkansas or over in Kentucky or up in Iowa or someplace money, and I don't want to pay him, and my buddy's the judge in my state, and my state protects citizens of my state, and they don't care about citizens from Iowa or Nebraska or Texas, and so they don't care if I pay that fellow back down there, so they'll just say, okay, we'll give you bankruptcy protection. If he didn't like it, he can come up into this court and persuade us otherwise. Well, that's not going to happen. So the federal courts have bankruptcy jurisdiction so that states won't play on each other that way and prey on each other that way, P-R-E-Y, because that is inevitably what happens. Law has to be written correctly or the depravity of man will be given full rein. What is a contract? That's an important question. We're going through 45 weeks of contract law on Saturday mornings. You can join us if you like. Just go to commonlawyer.com and go to the events button, and it will tell you how to participate. You can see me, but I can't see you. And we're going through the law of contracts. And one of the things we try to drive home is, I repeat it every week, and I tell those that participate, if you're going to understand the law of contracts, you've got to be able to say this, even if somebody has a revolver cocked and loaded and and pointed at your head. What is a contract? And a contract is this. At common law, remember our Constitution is a brief of common law government, and our common law informs everything about it, and the law of contracts at common law informs our Constitution. When it talks about contracts here, it's talking about contracts at common law. Well, what is a contract at common law? This definition is simple, and if you learn this, you'll learn, you know, pretty near as much as what they teach the professor to teach in the law schools. A contract is at least one promise that the courts, or the law, I should say, the law will enforce. Let me repeat that. A contract is at least one promise, one undertaking, that the law will enforce. Now, there are promises you can make that the law, or common law, really no law will enforce. If you just you meet me for the first time and tell me, I promise to give you $1,000 come Monday, and you don't show up, and I go into court and drag you in and tell the judge, file a complaint, this man promised to give me $1,000, and he didn't do it. And the judge will say, that's nice. Did you promise him anything back? No. Case dismissed. Because in that case, it would take a reciprocal commitment of some kind, the reciprocal debt. An inducement. I induce you to give me $1,000, you induce me to paint your house if you give me $1,000. Now we've got a reciprocal obligation, one to each other. We owe each other something. We have a debt. Debt and contract always go together. Show me a debt, and I'll show you a contract. And show me a contract, and I'll show you a debt. But remember, a contract consists of at least one promise that the law will enforce. We're going through that, and we're looking at the promises, just as an example. We're going through different provisions of the Bible, not all of them, but examining some of the promises. There are records of men making promises to men, of God making promises to men, of men making promises to God, of men making promises and nobody making a promise back. But if the law will enforce that promise, it's a contract, a trust relationship. As we say, a common law trust relationship is a promise without a reciprocal promise. It's just one person undertaking to establish a trust for the benefit of beneficiaries. And there doesn't have to be a promise back from the other side anywhere. Well, that's a promise that our law will enforce. So it falls under the category of contract law. Because it fits the definition. And if you look at all of contract law, the law of promises, as we say at common law, I've looked at it. I've never seen an exception to that rule, and that particular definition applies across the board. Well, that's impairing obligation of contracts is something that state legislatures cannot do. What does that mean? Well, that means if you make a contract, the government can't come along, the legislature can't come along and say, We're doing away with your contract. Well, unless, of course, it's for an unlawful purpose. If you make a contract with somebody and give $10,000 to knock somebody off, well, that contract's not enforceable. You see, that's not really a contract. Why? Because the law will not enforce a contract to knock somebody off. There are a lot of contracts the law won't enforce. So let's keep that in mind. Well, let's go on and read some more of this. We talked about some of the other provisions there. It says no state shall emit bills of credit. No state shall emit, E-M-I-T. That means give out, pass out, distribute bills of credit. That bars any state from issuing paper money. That's what that clause does. That's important. Of course, it says also that money is gold and silver coin. Is that true? Yes, that's true. Do we follow that provision of our Constitution? No, we ignore it entirely and violate it in spades with a vengeance. The Federal Reserve Bank. That's enough under our Constitution to send a person to jail to be involved in that kind of a banking situation. That destroys us all. Usury destroys us all, as a matter of fact. Let's see. Banking monopoly. That's what this clause forbids. It follows, therefore, that if the general government in Washington, D.C., whether by statute or protected banking monopoly, requires the people to accept paper banknotes in payment of debts, it forces the states to violate, under unconstitutional force, this clause of our Constitution. Well, for more than 100 years, specifically in 1913, that's when it started, for more than 100 years, the board of the Federal Reserve Bank has exercised self-serving control, of course, and has in effect enslaved our country. Well, let's go to Section 10, Clause 2. It says, no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any imposts or duties on exports or imports. Actually, it says on imports or exports, except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws. And the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by any state on imports or exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States. And all such laws shall be subject to the revision and control of the Congress. Now, without consent of Congress, I'm not quoting anymore, but without the consent of Congress, no state can tax goods entering or leaving its borders, except for small fees, it says, absolutely necessary to cover the cost of inspection. They can do that. Maybe some of you have been to California. When you go into California on Interstate 80 coming from the west, go through Reno and go that way, or if you go down south and cross at Needles or it's not coming to me, but Interstate 40, if you cross at those places, or go on I-5 up into Oregon, if you cross back over into California, you'll be stopped, and people will ask you, the state officials will ask you if you have any fruit in your car, ask you where you're going, do you have any fruit in your car? Now, if they made you pay a little money come across the border, and they could prove it was absolutely necessary to pay those fellows to do that, well, that'd be lawful. That's what it says here. But California doesn't do that. They've been doing that ever since a young, boyish Jerry Brown was governor way back in the 70s. I remember when it happened. And the fruit fly got into some of the fruit, and he thought he'd stop it. Of course, he didn't, and now it's just another bureaucracy that is worthless. But it's an example of what they're talking about here. So the framers knew, the framers of the United States, that is, knew that, they knew that if the states were to lay imposts or duties on exports, imports or exports, the regular, that is the natural flow of commerce between the states will halt. Yeah. You see, there's the Commerce Clause in the Constitution that says so that commerce will be regular between the states. Congress has the power under the Commerce Clause to over trade and movement of goods and services between states in order to keep it regular. That means free-flowing, unimpeded. That's what that means. That doesn't mean that they can do things to stop the flow of commerce between the states. It means Congress can only do things that keeps it free-flowing, regular. That's what the word regular means. It means free. Misunderstood word. Further, any surplus left over after paying costs of state inspections must go to the Treasury of the United States, it says. So they're not going to let them just charge money, the states to charge money to do inspections of goods coming into their state and to charge exorbitant in prices and then keep the money. No, you're going to have to give it to the federal government if you charge more than what is absolutely necessary to carry it out. To ensure this result, the people of the United States by this clause allot to Congress ultimate control of state duties on imports or exports, subjecting all such laws to Congress's ever possible revision and control. The Treasury of the United States in this clause is the only department of the general government our Constitution mentions. Let me say that one more time. The Treasury of the United States, here in this clause, is the only department of the general government in Washington, D.C., that our Constitution mentions. All of these other departments, Department of Education, Department of Homeland Security, the czar of this, the czar of that, communications, all that. The Constitution of the United States doesn't give the general government authority to have. It's that simple. And should be done away with, all of them, except the Treasury of the United States. That would help us a lot. Back to you, John. Thank you again for the time. I appreciate it. John's looking for the unmute button. He got it. There he is.
Got it. Thank you. Okay. All right. We're going to go to our Q&A session now. If anybody's got any questions or comments, even if you have a question maybe for Brent, you can ask Brent or me or whatever. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's star six to get into the queue. We'll take our first caller, and it looks like that is going to be Judson, I think it is, J-U-D-S-O-N.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, this is Judson. Hey. I sent a few questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. But first question is, I'm wondering about what's the status of the Declaration of July 4th, 2016?
Well, it was part of the beginning of a process of papers that we had filed. And first we started serving upon the government. We spent a year serving lots of papers, hundreds of papers, to thousands of elected individuals, literally thousands. We, you know, the sheriffs, we sent it to the governors and legislators of all states, and of course, the U.S. legislators, and so on. And that was part of the paperwork of that process. And then about 2 years ago, we opened up a court case, court of record, filed it under statutory number because it was the only thing available to us. And we made it a depository of our paperwork, and it really started the beginning of a common law court. And just last month, August, we filed a paper, a decision, an order, and a declaration. And we've been filing, we filed two other papers since then. We mentioned those papers a little earlier. Let me open up my, one was filed on, the first was a decision and order and declaration to restore the law. It was a 50-page paper, and that was the decision. Now, we made a decision on 2 years in court, the plus one, so 3 years really, in a public court, court of common law. And so now we're coming in with decisions. We're joining cases. We're going to make decisions. We're challenging the cases that are operating outside of the law, operating in jurisdictions unknown, challenging those jurisdictions, and making decisions on that. Because clearly every case seems to be violated by a jurisdiction, that people are carried away to jurisdictions unknown. There are no courts of law. They're not open anymore. They fuse together. Equity and law, an impossibility, of course, but they claim to have done that under rules. Our next paper is going to talk about that, under rules. It wasn't even statutes. Rules of the court. They fused together in 1938. And the bill that gave them the power, the act that gave them the power, was in 1934. But anyway, filed a paper August 17, 2019, titled Decision in Order and Declaration to Restore the Law. On September 3rd, we filed another decision in order concerning the emerging of equity in law. We're nullifying that, which covered that law, but we're going to go into more depth in the next paper. And that was served, like I said, on the 3rd. And then September 9th, which is today, we mailed out another indictment on Judge Kahn. Very strong warning to the clerk of the court up there that they would be guilty of conspiracy with Judge Kahn should they start to exercise his will. We're going to probably read that paper next week. I don't think it's a long, it's a short paper. So we'll read that. We may read two papers next week, but we'll see how it goes.
Right. So
that's where we're at with that. And now we're going to continue to be filing and making decisions.
So I've entered this declaration on a lot of my casework. So would it be good to get you all those case numbers so that you could use them somehow in the appellate process, that they've been cited as evidentiary attachments?
Well, every case that we bring in as a joinder is evidence. We also take control. We give the court the opportunity to correct the lawlessness. And we give them 30 days, and they don't do the right thing, then we join the case. We're going through this process right now with quite a few cases. Then they're going to be joined into our case. They'll be given their final 30-day notice to respond. We'll show cause why things are the way you think they should be, you know. And then when they acquiesce on that, they will default. Then we will file a decision and move on. Now, we all do right. know, look, it's an uphill battle. Okay, it's an uphill battle. We don't expect that all of a sudden a magic wand's going to be waved and they're going to be totally obedient to us. No, they're going to fight us tooth and nail. And it's going to build and build and build and build, and that's the point. The building, the pressure, the filing of the papers that they cannot answer and make it clear on the paper, educating the people to understand and look at those papers and understand what we're doing to get behind us and work with us with the critical mass, coupled with what President Trump is doing, and he's very much aware of us and what we've been doing. He's been aware of us before he became president, and before he became president, he had already asked. We've been reporting to him when he was campaigning and during his presidency. And we've been informing when Sessions was in. We were informing him, now Bill Barr. We've sent our indictments to them. We've sent our decisions and orders. They know exactly what we're doing. We're not hidden anywhere. Everything's in the open. And we've laid out by what power and authority we operate and do these things by. After all, we are the people. They are creatures of the law. We are creatures of the Creator and His law, of course. We live under His law, but they are creatures of us, our law, called the Constitution. And so, you know, all this pressure build up, critical mass, coupled with what Trump is doing, and we do hope that one day Trump kind of puts a little push behind us to get the people back in control of their government, because if we don't have government by consent, it's not government by consent. It either is or it isn't.
Got you. So I was reading some of your paperwork and how y'all pushed a fax to all the jurisdictions, giving them notice of what Valhalla, the National Liberty Alliance, is doing. Is that something that Valhalla could do again, is send a widespread, like, blanket fax to all the jurisdictions and as well to the militias, the leaders of the militias?
Well, again, we did collect numbers, fax numbers of militias. We didn't get that many. I think we got about a dozen or two. We were emailing them things. We haven't heard a response from them. That was a while back. We did have 10 fax machines running 24/7 for quite some time, and that's how we were serving these people through faxes. I don't know that it accomplished that much because, you see, our paperwork looks very legal, and when you get someone who has no understanding of the law, like a sheriff or anybody, even a governor, even though they're lawyers, but they don't even look at it anyway. But, you know, especially the people who don't have any understanding of the law, the first thing they do is they go and they get a hold of their county attorney and give it to them, and they look at it, these people are crazy, don't worry about it, throw the paper away. I don't know how much it accomplished. We can go back to that, doing that, but I don't know. Right now, all our papers go to quite a few people. We serve all 94 federal district courts. We serve the 13 appellate courts on the federal level. We serve, of course, the United States Supreme Court. They're top on our list as the defendant. We serve both houses. We serve all 50 governors. And we're serving also all, Jen, we're serving all of the legislators also of the 50 states, aren't we? Did we get out that many? I think we were going to do that, and I'm pretty sure we did accomplish that, but I have to wait for them to tell us.
So can we get this message to every county, parish, and city?
Well, we're working that way because starting this fall, I'm not sure exactly when, very soon, we're going to start teaching the committee man process and get people to run for next year. Next year is the big election year. We need elected committee men in every county across this nation. And we have 3,134 counties. Of course, some of those counties are rural and they don't even have a court. That's very rare. You know, but there are counties that are in the wilderness, like up in Alaska, and you go up into Maine and even Vermont, different places. And, of course, you go out west, Wyoming and Montana. There's a lot of counties where there's no people. You know, it's just a rural. And so those counties particularly, they come to another county to deal with a sheriff and a court. Maybe they have sheriff. Well, I doubt they have sheriffs. But, you know, another county would probably have to have the court system for them if someone lived in the wilderness and they wanted to come out to go to a court. But, you know, the thing is that let's say 3,000 counties. We need bare minimum 5 people for each county. That's 15,000 people running for committeemen. If we could do that across America, we can take 100% control of our political process, get rid of these clowns that are top-down and deciding what criminal on the left or what criminal on the right we can vote for. No, we can now look for statesmen and take control away from them. Now, we can accomplish that. It'll be a lot more difficult. We can accomplish that with 5 people in every state. But each one of those 5 people, they got a lot of work to do to work with all the counties within their state. So it'll take a long time to dribble down, trickle down all of the power and authority that we're trying to take and give to the local people, the grassroots. So the best way to do it is to try to get 4 to 5 people in every county. So that, and then, of course, we're building administrations, which we've been doing and talking about and continue to do, building administrations for the juries in every county. And, again, we need 15,000 people for that. So 30,000 people, we can take 100% control of the political process. We just have to remember what Jefferson said. We don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate. Just because people go out and make a vote, that doesn't mean they're participating. Most of them don't. And it's a bare minimum. It's a skeleton crew in every county that controls everything. And I really mean it, a skeleton crew. This is exactly what they have. They have 4 to 5 people in every county controlling the county. And of course, they're connected statewide, come together. We here in New York have 62 counties. So 62 times 5 is, what, 310 or something. So 310 people control the entire political process of the state of New York, New York State. We can do the same thing and take it back. And we have to take the courts back to accomplish that because they won't yield their power back to the elected committeemen. They're not elected, by the way. That's the whole part of the scam. They don't want anyone elected. So no one's really elected as committeemen. When we come in as elected committeemen and we go to take power and authority back to the people on the local level, they're going to fight that tooth and nail, and the courts will stick up for them, and they'll maintain the status quo, and we'll never get in. But we can get in once we get back to federal courts because we can force them to obey the law, and we can use the federal courts to force them to do that because it's the election. You know, it's the political process. And so they have to obey that political process. And once we do that, that's when we take power, and then we can take control of all of the people within that process. We can train them of the truth. We can get rid of all of the corrupt individuals. They're easy to find, very easy to find. We'll talk about that when that time comes. But in any event, they will probably flee as soon as we come in. So what will be left are the people that are looking for leadership And we're going to do more than give them leadership. We're going to teach them how to lead. We're going to teach them how to take power and authority on the grassroots level. We're going to teach them how to really go out, educate themselves, and require statesmen and not politicians to become our elected individuals. You know, Trump is accomplishing lots of things for that very reason. He's not a politician. He's a true statesman. He's not a politician. He's not in this for the money. He's in this for the people. And that's what we have to be in it for, and we have to teach people to be in it for. We have to maintain integrity and take power in those two. Again, we have consent of government when we control the courts and we control the political process. Now we have government by consent.
John?
Yes.
The very first document, the decision and order and declaration to restore the law, we mailed that to the state senates only. And at that point, we kind of ran out of gas. And so the rest of the mailings, we didn't include the state, House, or Senate in the mailings.
Okay. All right, so they're not getting it. But we are getting the governors. We're getting 94 federal district courts.
Right.
We're getting, and then we're
and
getting all the major players.
Courts, yeah.
Right. Yep. So that's where our paper is. And, you know, I sent it out to about, I think I had about 5,000, 4,000 to 5,000. It was two mailings. 3,000 each. I have a software that'll kick out the mail, and I probably got maybe a third return. You know, bad addresses or whatever. So about 4,000 news medias across the United States, we mailed these things out to. Only the first one. We only mailed out the decision and order and declaration to restore. We haven't continued with the rest of them. Right now, we're just going to continue with the focus. But the word's got to get out by radio. The word's got to get out by YouTube. You know, all these different groups that are operating under YouTube or internet radio or even regular radio, AM and FM or whatever. Any place we can get out to get our message out and be interviewed and get people to come take a look and become educated and take control of their nation. That's what we need to do. Anything else? Because we're going to move to the next caller. Judson.
That's all. I really appreciate it. Thank you, John.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go to our next caller. Let's see. I want to hit the wrong button here. Asula Williams, Missouri?
Nope, this is not Missouri, it's Florida.
No, let me see. Oh, Felicia from Florida jumped up there. Okay, I guess this doesn't come up in the order I see it. All right, go ahead, Felicia, how you doing?
All right, I just have a couple of questions. I filled out the petitioner paper and PDF filed it to Jim. When am I supposed to actually mail it?
Jim will give you details as we move along. It's a pretty simple process, but we have to be methodical about it. It's got to go out in order. We have to make sure that it's done properly, that the return address is proper, and so on and so forth. That takes a little time, but not that much time. But Jim could usually move as fast as the people can move. And again, we will have as much interest in your case as you do. If you're on top of it, then we'll be on top of it. We'll be keep moving it along. Sometimes people will start the process, drag their feet for a month or two, then all of a sudden the emergency comes up, and they think that we drive in red fire trucks here, but we don't. We then pick again. You lose all that time if you don't keep in touch with Jim and keep going to the next step, which isn't really that many steps. But
he hasn't called me back to let me know when I'm supposed to actually mail the official paperwork back. You guys said that you was going to write a letter to Pacer to find out where my documents were.
I'm sorry, say that again. You wanted to find what?
The last time I was on the call, you guys said you was going to write a letter to Pacer to actually see where my documents at because the sheriff or anybody said they couldn't find it. I wonder if you guys done that. It's been about 2 months.
I don't know. Is that what Jim said? I mean, we can't find those papers. You'd have to go do that. Look, what we do know is when you file papers in court, they don't always get filed. That's a crime and punishable by up to a year in prison, some cases depending on what's involved, 3 years in prison, and if it's a conspiracy between a judge and a clerk, Well, just the judge alone is 20 years. And if there's a conspiracy between the two, it's 20 years. And so any time papers go into the court, they have to go along the judicial process. You know, there's a procedure going on. It's got to move through its regular routine. And it's got to get up into the court, be heard, and, you know, it's got to go through a process, a judicial process. Anytime anyone removes something out of that judicial process, anybody, judge anybody, okay, that's a crime. And there are statutes under USC, let me see, is it 18? I think it is 18. Let me think a minute. Yeah, under USC 18, there are statutes that lay out the required penalty for that. Now, remember, the required penalty, that would be, you see, that's a case, if someone was to break the law on that level and they go to court, they get indicted and they go to court, it's going to be a court of record. Now, they were operating under a contract, another agreement, under a certain code or statutes. Every government agency operates under, you know, some kind of rules, statutes, codes. You know, it's just like a corporation operating under policies and procedures. And when they do certain violations, it makes it criminal. And then the legislators properly legislated the required penalty for that that criminal action. Now, being that it's heard in a court of law, the contract is permitted to come in, the equity of that contract is permitted to come into that court and be exercised only by the acceptance and the will of the tribunal, being the 12 jurists. They need to understand they have the power of nullification. If they think that a different kind of penalty should be applied, they can just throw it out. If they think it's, hey, that's a good law, we like that law, but not for this case, they could just nullify it for that case. That's the power of the people. This is a court of law. This is what our heritage is. This is what makes us free and have liberty from tyranny, liberty from control of government control and abuse by their codes and rules and statutes and their swarms of code enforcement officers. We have all of that because we're ignorant. If the people weren't ignorant, they'd say, no, you don't have jurisdiction. Get away from me. We're all saying that. They have no power. So we have to take that back. We're going to do that. That's why what National Liberty Alliance is working to do, to take back our courts, to take back our political process, and have government by consent of the people again, and thereby receiving back our heritage, rightly given to us by God.
Okay, so no paper was filed to sign out where my paperwork was.
Not that I know of, but that's a common thing. They remove papers from the courts, but we're not going to worry. If we're filing papers for you and they're not filing them in the court.
I was just going by what you said, that's all.
Okay. Now, if we're filing papers in the court through a joinder, okay, what we're doing is we're challenging their jurisdiction and we're making the case that you're being denied due process. We give them 30 days to fix the problem. Now, they may send them back. They may just delete them, throw them away, pull them out of the filings. That's all a crime. All that is a crime. Okay? We let those 30 days go by and drop. And after, we don't care what they've done with the papers. We don't care what they look at. They're supposed to know the law. They have positions. They're under powers and authorities that we gave them. They're under the Constitution. They're creatures of the law. They need to obey the law, and they will be punished by the law. So we just move it at that point. We'll move it into our case as a joinder, okay? We'll give them a final notice. We're being very graceful to them, giving them another notice, 30 days. Hey, show cause. Let's fix this problem. Fix it on your own, and we're all good. If you don't fix it on your own, then indictments are coming down and rulings are going to be made. And that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be indicting these judges and these clerks, and we're going to be making rulings and filing them with the courts, and we're going to move on. And again, it's an uphill battle, okay? And we're not going to have accomplishments in the beginning, but the weight of what we're doing, the process and the weight of what we're doing, is what's going to get us at some point and get justice for all those cases. And they got a serious problem. We have a serious problem. They created it, okay? Because we can get swamped. Once we get into power and authority, the courts may be swamped by all these court cases that took place before that never had the jurisdiction to do it. They were convicting people out in jurisdictions unknown. And, you know, there's people that belong to be restrained, you know, murderers and, you know, serial killers, whatever. But they were convicted in courts that were not courts of law. If you have a stacked jury, that's not a court of law, okay? If you got a jury that's been, controlled by the judiciary, by the judge, by the whatever, the state, okay, then that's not a court of law. If they're prosecuting under equity, claiming it to be a common law court, that's jurisdiction's unknown. It's not a court of law. So it's a problem at some point, but let's worry about that problem later. Right now, we need to do what we can with the court cases that are up and coming, and we need to put the pressure on them by piling it on. That's what we're going to do, pile it on.
Yeah, it's been years, but I really think that if they would have found, the sheriff's office would have found my paperwork in paper, I would still be in the house.
Okay, did we file paperwork for you, or this is paperwork you filed?
You filed it.
We filed it. Oh, okay. What did we file? Was this a non-judicial foreclosure, habeas corpus? What was it? Or this was for the CPS, what is it, CPS or something? Which was it? I don't recall, because we got so many cases.
Foreclosure for show cause.
Oh, okay, yes. We've done something. We pulled all those together, and you need to do a joinder paper with Jim, and we'll take care of everything from there. Okay, and you might have done that, and if you've done that, then Jim should be working on it.
Yeah, I signed the petition paper he told me to turn in.
I'm sorry?
I signed a petitioner paper to add my name to
right.
What you guys
it's right, it's called the joinder petition, I think it's called. So, yeah, okay. Yeah, that should be in motion then. We just started this paperwork with this, and so we got a lot of, bugs to get out of it. And we've written papers, and we got to tweak them a little here and a little there, depending on what's going on. Like the way the courts are reacting with a couple of papers we filed, we see we got to tweak our papers now a little bit to be able to deal with those problems in ahead of time by having it in the paperwork. And if that's what they want to do with the paperwork, that's fine. But look at ignorance of the law is no excuse. It doesn't matter. Indictments will flow, convictions will eventually hopefully take place, and justice will be applied. And again, justice is no justice if we only get half of justice. Anybody's above the law, hey, then we don't really have justice, do we? We want 100% justice.
Okay.
And Trump knows that, by the way. Trump knows that. He's aware of that.
He knows a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. And anything else, Felicia?
Okay, that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let us take our next caller, Crystal from Connecticut. How you doing, Crystal? Crystal from Connecticut. 203, Crystal. Calling Crystal one more time. Crystal from Connecticut, you got the mic. Go right ahead. You're unmuted. Okay, one last call for Crystal. We'll go to our next caller. All right, going to take our next call. And by the way, anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 to get into the queue, we'll take our next caller. Missouri, Williams.
Good evening, John and all. How y'all doing?
Good, and yourself?
Great. I do have a question, about the Fielman document, the Fielman, they're using the Fielman, I can't remember what it was, doctrines. What do you think about that?
Which doctrine is that?
Is the Fielman doctrines? that they used in a federal court?
I don't know that I'm familiar with it. I may be familiar with some process connected to it, but I'm not familiar with that name. Can you spell the first name?
It's Fieldman, F-I-E-L-D-M-A-N.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that. Brent, are you familiar with that doctrine, Fieldman document, doctrine? Brent, are you still out there? Maybe you got to hit your mute button and unmute yourself. Okay, I guess Brent's away from his mic right now. I'm not familiar with it. Can you tell me a little about it?
Well, there was talk, you know, they was using that in the foreclosure, and there was talking about that the Fieldman doctrines is famous for like, you know, whatever you brought forth in one court, you cannot reuse it in another court.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, to me, that's it. It's not a, I think it's just a case law. I mean, it's not a case law. It's just a company that used it, but I forgot all about what I, you know, when I was using that, when they send me the form on it, but I was just wondering
Is that some kind of a doctrine that they're going to try to use to prevent the moving of the case?
Yes, they can't
do that. I'll tell you why. Because they're not even really in a court, even though they got the court's name on it. Usually there's no judge assigned to it, but sometimes there is. But they're never going to put their fingerprint on the final paperwork there. They're never going to stamp it and sign it and seal it. That's not going to happen. But why? Because it's a non-judicial foreclosure. And the states that don't have non-judicial foreclosure acts or, you know, legislation, they don't care. They do it anyway. And the courts are complying. They're going along with that process. But I thought I heard Brent's voice. Brent, are you here? Are you familiar with that doctrine?
Well, I've heard of it. I know what it's about. It has to do with, I think she spelled it F-I-E-L-D. I think it's F-E-L-D-M-A-N, Fieldman.
Okay.
Fieldman.
Yeah, okay, Fieldman. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, Rooker-Feldman doctrine says that federal courts cannot set in review of state court decisions. But that's a really complicated mess.
That's true.
Yeah,
we agree with that.
Yeah,
we agree with that. We don't take them to federal court to make the argument of the case. We take them to federal court because they have brought you to jurisdictions unknown, denied you due process, and that's a federal issue under the United States Constitution. That's their jurisdiction.
Well,
that's an unalienable right of due process. So what Brent is explaining here, he's correct. That doctrine does prevent a case from being pulled into a federal court to hear something that they don't have the authority or the jurisdiction to hear. And the jurisdiction is in law and equity, and this is in Article 3 of the Constitution. Let me read it out very specifically. Section 1. Let's see, was it Section 2? Yeah, Section 2. The judicial power shall extend in cases in law, okay? That's natural law only from the standpoint of dealing with a constitutional violation of an unalienable right. And equity, okay, of course, that's all the codes and statutes that they've written, arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States and the treaties and so on. So, yeah, they don't have the power or authority to hear cases in foreclosures or any of those things. And what we're saying to them, and we know the end result of this, in other words, what we're saying to them is, you don't have the power or the authority to do this action in a jurisdiction that you don't have. If you want to take someone's house away from them, go to a court of law and do it lawfully. Give those people their right of due process, which they refuse to do. And the reason they refuse to do, because they can't do it. The way they set this whole thing up, they have no standing in court to be able to take your home away. They cannot do it.
Yeah, I thought so, because, you know, I think that, you know, the I was, you know, was I didn't use that. They used that against me, but, you know, I thought that the Constitution is much more powerful than that, you know, because it's not, that has nothing to do with the common law, you know.
The only reason we're able to be able to control as many cases as we can take on, which would be quite a few, is because it's always the same thing. They're denying due process, and that's what we're challenging. If they don't want to give you due process and they can't answer to prove that that court that they're in is due process, then it's going to go through its process and shut them down. They're going to cease and desist from all activities and return those people back to their original state. And if we have to do it to the point to take them into the federal courts at that point and they refuse to obey, then we're going to do indictments. We'll add that to the mix. And in time, the pressure and time of these cases mounted, and this is the evidence. You know, look at this clown, King Kong, which is his name is Judge Khan, okay? He thinks he's a king, and he thinks he could do what he wants in the courts. And he thinks he can put his fingerprints into a common law court. He thinks he can make decisions in a common law court. He's not the tribunal in a common law court. The people are the tribunal. He has no power or control. When he goes into that court, he acts as an administrator of the court. He puts on his magistrate cap, and he doesn't rule. He exercises the ruling of the tribunal, which is we, the people, in that court. And so what he has done, which we just laid out in a paper that we filed today, which, again, we're probably going to read next week, but we filed it, and it's up online right now if anybody wants to read it. It's on our front page, right towards the top. It says right there, filed September 9th, 2019, Judge Khan's second indictment. And that indictment, we laid out exactly what he had done. That indictment proves our case. Okay, his actions in that court, his own actions prove that case. Okay, and he's breaking the law, and he's asking the clerk, he's intimidating the clerk to break the law with him. He's intimidating the clerk to ignore the process of law that paperwork needs to go through and to remove it and destroy it. Okay, he says we'd come pick up the papers, or He's ordering the clerk to destroy that paper, okay? That's against the law. He's acting, he has no authority to do that, okay? There is no statute that gives him any powers, especially there's no statute that gives anybody any powers to have power and authority in a court of law but the people themselves and the administrator who's exercised the will of the people in that court. So, and this is the battle we're under, and so it makes the case. Every case that we file makes our point, makes our case. Jurisdiction's unknown, denying people their unalienable right, the right of habeas corpus, the right to be heard. And it's always the same thing over and over again. So, okay.
Thank you, and God bless you guys. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Godspeed. Thank you. Okay, we'll take the next call in a minute. Again, anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6, to get into the queue, star 6. We'll take our next caller. Let's see. It is Audrey from New York. You got the mic. Audrey from New York, 585 number. You've got the mic. Audrey, New York. Okay, I guess maybe away from their phone or something. One last call for Audrey from New York. You've been unmuted. You got the mic. Go right ahead. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Last call for Audrey, New York. Okay, we go now to, we don't have a name. It's a 979 number. Area code, you've been unmuted.
Yes. My name is Marie, and I'm from Texas.
Okay, Marie.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes. My name is Marie, and I'm from Texas.
Yep. Go ahead, Marie, from Texas.
Yes. first, I want to thank y'all. I feel like y'all were God-given to me in my many troubles that I've had. So I would like to thank the organization. I would like to give you my praises and my blessings. And then the next thing I wanted to talk to y'all was I need help with a case. I know this is out of what we're discussing, but there's a federal, a federal civil rule 26. And I just needed somebody to just push me in the right direction, where to find...
Are you talking about USC 26, the tax code?
No, I was sued over money by a third party portfolio recovery, and I took them to court, and they drug it to the federal court, and now they told me I had to do a federal the civil rule 26 to disclose. I guess they want me to do some paperwork, but
well,
I don't
challenge jurisdiction. And if you're not sure how to do that, if you don't know how to do it, then you can't really do it because we can give you the forms and everything, but you have to understand the court. You have to understand what they're doing. You have to understand what the next move is about. And it sounds like they've moved to the point where they now want you to disclose, whatever it is you have. And I presume
that's what
they do. Yeah, did they do that usually? Did you lose the case already, or is this just preparing for the case?
No, we just started. It just started. We had a preliminary hearing at the federal court in Houston, and I'm going like pro se. I'm the plaintiff. And
okay. What exactly is the case about? I mean, just give me a general, very very simple.
Yes, sir. The case is about money. It's about a credit card. It's for $808. And
okay,
they were
so
extremely
upset. You owe them money from a credit card. You're fighting that, and then they moved it to federal court?
Yes, they did.
That's,
they moved
I
it to the federal
that's possible. Have you had a hearing in the federal court yet?
Yes, I had my first one. And then they sent it to administrative, to a magistrate.
Okay,
and even
administrative court. This must have something to do with the banking thing, the banking industry. That may be why they're trying to take control over that. Look at challenge jurisdiction. If you know how to do that and you know how that works, you can use our forms if you want or create your own or whatever. But, challenge their jurisdiction. If you go to our site, National Liberty Alliance, and click on due process, read through that page very carefully, and the next portal at the end of that page will bring you into a place where there's lots of forms and different things you can use, or you can sign up and have your case joined, and we can bring it into our case. But I'll tell you right now, they don't have jurisdiction over them.
They don't have jurisdiction?
No, they don't, because they're not giving you a court of they're not giving you a court of law. They're not giving you due process. You're in jurisdictions unknown, operating under statutes which have nothing to do with you. It may, may be guidelines and controls for the banking industry, but not for you.
Okay.
And,
so let me ask you this. I'm the plaintiff. As a plaintiff, I can challenge the portfolio recovery and their attorneys that they took me to the wrong jurisdiction, right?
Absolutely. You want a court of law. You want 12 people untainted to sit there and make a decision on your case. They'll never give that to you, but that's what you want.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, John. Thank you very much. I got my answer. You've just blessed
me. Okay, but it's an uphill, just so you know, it's an uphill battle. You know, do what you can. You need to be ready, though. You need to do a lot of homework because they're going to respond with different things, and you got to respond to everything they respond, and you have to understand where they're going and what they're doing and whether what they're doing is lawful or not. And there is a mindset that you can develop that really helps you answer these questions very easily and quickly. But that takes a little time. It comes with experience. So if you've got some experience as a pro se, then that's the beginning. So, you know, if you run into trouble, get back to us, and you can always consider joining your case with us, but see what you could do, you know?
Yes, I'm going to join it tonight. I'm going to do the joiner form, and I do thank you for answering my question. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. All right. Okay, we're going to take the next call in a minute. We only got a few people in the queue, so anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6, to get into the queue, star 6. Okay, we're going to take our next caller, which is, let's see, Tamara from Arizona. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yes, Tamara.
How you doing, Tamara?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, thank you.
My question is, I'm to the point of amicus curiae. We sent that out on Friday, and
okay. It's
my understanding that it should be delivered tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
After that point, when does the indictment come for the judge?
Well, this is a time of study now, okay? You know, and you should be studying, and because things are going to take a little time. We give them 30 days, depending on what they do. Sometimes they'll remove the papers and they'll send them back to you instead of us. Even though we send it to them, you know, all of the return addresses and everything is us, they don't want to talk to us. So they send it back to the person, and then the person sends us to us, back to us. We've been finding that in some cases. I don't know that we could say that's all cases, but we've only got a couple done already, so moving in that process. I'm going to add to that paperwork shortly. Because the next thing we do is when they return the papers, then we give them a notice of crime and resend the papers back. And if they just kick them back again, then we're just going to move for cause right into the federal court. If they take their time, they got 30 days to answer. If they answer, that's fine. They're not going to be able to answer appropriately because they're not giving you due process. So then at that point, we then do the paper moving for cause into the federal court. And once we move it into the federal court for cause, they got 30 days, again, to answer. Or just restore the person. You know, give back the house if you took the house, and restore the person. If they spent X amount of dollars on lawyers and different fees and stuff, restore the person and cease and desist, and we're all happy. If they don't and they get to the end day, because once we do the next set of paperwork, we got a wherefore clause, and that wherefore clause is going to apply some not only restitution but damages, okay? Mm-hmm. We're not going to be looking for a lot of damages. We may, I'm not sure exactly, $100 in silver, face value silver. Okay, and we explain exactly in paperwork what that is. Right now, silver an ounce is about $18, $17. So let's say it's $18 for an ounce of silver. Well, $100 or 100 ounces of silver is $18,000. So generally, that's what we're going to be pushing for restoring. That's not restoring, but that's for injury. But now you have cases where children have been taken, okay? There'll be something there for that, but we're going to be very careful with the language because the damage done to the children and how long they've been taken for and the damage to the family is incalculable. I mean, how do you calculate that? That will leave that case open to be able to go for damages. If we can give them a win and exercise the law, then they can go in for damages for psychological and physical injuries on themselves and the children. So those kind of cases, there'll be, you know, there should be an extended ability to sue. But for houses and stuff, restoring the individual back to their original state and $100 in silver face value.
Will they be having to pay for damages for throwing me in jail and harming me?
Well, again, that would be extended damages, okay? We're going to be very clear on what the damages apply. Anything extended, any damages beyond that, then you would have to sue. But remember, you'll be suing. Once these things are recognized and we're able to execute them and they obey the law and everything starts to go well, you're going to be in a different environment when you go back to sue. They'll want to settle.
Mm-hmm.
Remember where we're trying to head to. We're trying to get to where the people control the courts. Mm-hmm. In order to do that, it requires four individuals, okay, in every single county to take a position called administrative of the juries. Right now, you know, they take care of the administration of the juries. You know, the court system has a system set up, and they have this jury organization, whatever. But it's all controlled by the government. No, we don't want it controlled by the government. It's become to the people. So we take control of the juries. We orientate the juries. We train them and teach them. We get the 8 hours the first, you know, a day with them to orientate them, prepare them for the job ahead, whether it's a grand jury or a trial jury. So we get to give them some basic information. We need to talk to them about taking an oath to go into that court and make a decision with honor, justice, and mercy in mind. And that they're in the King's Court. They're representing the Creator, ultimately, because we're under common law. And we're under the Creator's law. So they have to exercise it with their heart. And of course, with their mind, their heart. At the end of the day, they got to consider mercy. And their decisions need to be made with an eye on restoring the individual. And also, they need to understand the power of nullification that they have. If that law doesn't work well and ring well in your heart and your mind, then nullify it. Say, hey, this is out of here. We're not going to do that. We got something else in mind. They get to decide not only what the facts are, but what the law that's going to be applied, okay? Mm-hmm. They get to decide, the jury also gets to decide what the remedy is. You know, the government makes a remedy that benefits them, and maybe take fines and different things, maybe seize the properties and take control. No. This belongs to the people. The people get that. We have to restore the people. One of the maxims of common law for every injury, there must be a remedy. And how do you give a remedy? Well, the only way we can do it is you, first of all, restore them to their original state, and usually it's a money decision. You know, you got to give some relief, okay? So money's not going to go to the state. It's going to go to the people in a court of law. You know, when they operate in these other commercial activities, whether it be, some kind of a political administration thing, you know, some agency or some government agency, or a commercial activity there, you know, they charge a fee for the equity courts. I think that's appropriate because they don't have a right to use our courts, but they pay a fee to use our courts. That's commercial. That's good. Yeah, I'm good with that. But you can't charge a fee for a court of law, okay, especially if there's a criminal thing going on there. But even if it's just a civil case type thing, you know, where it's a contract case, you know, it shouldn't cost the people to go in and get justice. They're looking for justice. But anyway.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else?
No, I just want to say thank you because I'm learning a lot, and I feel as though I've become even closer to my Creator. So thank you again.
Read. That's the key to all learning, you know, just reading. You know, studying is good, too, of course. We should all be studying something, you know, taking a focus and digging out and pulling information, bringing it together and coming to conclusions. But reading is also one of the most important things because it gives you the experience of others to begin with. And it also creates the necessary framework in your mind to be able to take these thoughts and put them somewhere. So reading history, American history particularly, common law history. There's a great book out there. I talk about it all the time, The Excellence of the Common Law. Read that book. The Making of America, you know, that what a book that is. You can get that at the National Center for Constitutional Studies. I know we have a link on our website to that. They have great books. They have The Real George Washington, The Real Benjamin Franklin, The Real Thomas Jefferson, and of course, this book, The Making of America, and quite a few other books. Those are all great, great books. You know, you also read the Federalist Papers. You can get that up on our website. We have a lot of stuff on our website to read. We have a lot of the classical readings that you can go up there and read. Under the link called Education, we have all our founding documents. We have the Federalist Papers, biographies, state constitutions. We have essays and lectures, American history lectures, common law lectures, trial by jury essays. We have lots of stuff. out there. We have a free constitutional class up there. I think that's done by, that particular constitutional class is like an introduction to the Constitution. And if I recall, I believe that's Michael Bodnarik did that. And it's a video class, very good. I took his class live many years ago. And if you take his class live, if he comes back into the area, once you take, you get back in free the second time around and third time around, whatever, as long as you paid for it once to come in to take the course. We have Hobbes, Locke, Spinoza, Hume, Newton. We had the 5,000-year leap. We have law dictionaries and law libraries up there. We got a lot of stuff. That could be a little boring getting into the law libraries. You know, I don't, you know, but they're there, people to look things up if they want. You know, we want to stay in on the common law focus, and we got our course, of course, government by consent course. We have a civics course, 120 hours of course there. They're really an excellent course to understand how America got to where it's at, you know. So, you know, read, you know. We're not a people that read anymore. And I speak to myself first, but now I've become a reader now. You know, I realized I got to read, and that's how you. And there's nothing. You know, there's nothing can take. You can have all the education you want if you don't have experience. You know, so you got to get into the court and get some experience. Even if you're sitting there listening and watching other cases, you know, not so much really, because the problem with the other cases is they're all equity court cases. But at least to see how they're going, their mindset, what they do to people, how they react. And sometimes they do the right thing, but it's only between themselves. It's someone like you and me come in, we're one of the people, they're going to destroy us. First one to beat in there is the judge. I have never had a case where I haven't had to fight the judge first. Never, ever. Went to court. Well, no, I can't say that's true. One time I didn't have to fight the judge. Judge was a good guy. He did the right thing. But and that was once. But, yeah, I have to fight the judge. I spend all my time papers fighting back and forth with him to get a just position in the court. They don't want to hear it. They don't like it. It's a problem. But, you know, again, you know, you can move things along into different directions, and you can put them into positions where they start to fear because they don't know what you know, and if you're able to respond and continue to keep the other side and the judge ultimately on the defensive, and you're always on the offensive, that means you're winning, and that should really put a concern in the judge, because he's got to protect himself.
Mm-hmm.
State judges may be too stupid to know they need to protect themselves. I've really seen just state judges do the dumbest things in the world. And as far as county, town, and village judges, forget about it. They totally, as soon as they open their mouth, they break the law at every move, every step, every turn. It's unbelievable. The ignorance. And there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. You know? All right, anything else?
No, thank you. Have a good evening.
Okay, thanks. I only got a couple of people in the queue. Anybody wants to get in there? Star 6. Next, let's see, we'll take our next person. It is Brian. You got the mic. What state you from?
Hey there, John. This is Brian from Oregon.
How you doing, Brian?
Doing well, doing well. Actually, quite glad to be on the call, and wanted to say, first off, just thanks for what you guys are doing, the education, the community, and just all your action and diligence on moving and pushing forward. So thank you.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. So my question tonight, I actually have a few different things, but the first one right off that's overall a foreclosure that started back in, it's a series, so I'll do kind of an overall on the broad scope of the legal action. So it all started with a Deutsche Bank and an illegal assignment, which was from a deposed robo-signer, Kathy Hall, who is actually on record as being a robo-signer. So that's the assignment that's being used actually in the foreclosure action being taken on right now. And so the bank they won a foreclosure in 2013, and then a month after that, they filed for a voluntary dismissal, which they got. And then they reopened the case again. They filed for a second foreclosure in 2017, and so I lost that one as well. And in that, they proceeded with the writ of execution for sale at the Sheriff's Department. So my action that I was able to take was I filed for a bankruptcy, and so in the bankruptcy, creating the stay of release, relief of stay, and then in that process, it was rather interesting because I was told by the bankruptcy judge directly that I would ultimately, even though the attorney could not prove proof of claim and the bank did not present proof of claim, that I would still lose the house anyway by color of law, and that's what they operated under there.
Yeah, they operate under the process called NREM. This all stems out of the 1934 Act, which fused together equity and law, which is what we've been talking about the last week or two. And that's what they're operating under. It's all unlawful. They're going after the thing instead of the person. They think that they can do that. And, right. and they actually played a game in the federal courts. They have it written up so that if you don't challenge it, once you get into federal court, if they're coming at like the IRS or anybody in the federal government coming out after you, and they're going after money to seize money, they go right in and seize money in REM anyway, even before the court case even goes. They do the lien. Like they have the power and the authority to do that, and they can't do that either. That's never right. done lawfully. They file what's called a notice of lien, which they file in your county, and your sheriff gets it, and the clerk gets it, and it gets filed in the clerk's, in the county record. And that's a lie. Because what a notice of lien means is that he went through a federal process to get a lien, and it's filed in the court. In order to do that, they need to file two papers. One's a fiduciary authority. The other one is a proof of claim. And both of them are affidavit forms. They must be sworn to. No federal agent in their right mind will go and sign that and swear to it, so it doesn't exist. It never existed. Even when they came after me, and it didn't exist, okay?
Right.
And other people gone down there, I've advised to go down. They never do it. They can't do it. So right there, it's fraud on the court to begin with. So the process.
Right.
Are you still in the court? Are you still in that court?
I set myself up essentially for a way out, which was by. Getting a dismissal, in a sense, having the court on its own accord dismiss it. So I knew that if I asked for a dismissal, they could possibly deny me. So I essentially stalled out enough that the court dismissed. So I was dismissed from the bankruptcy, and I didn't have anything discharged or anything like that, which was okay. And,
well, let me ask you a question. Did you lose your house yet, or are you still in it?
No. So that's actually the point that I am at right now. So,
but you're still in your house. You're still hold on. You're still in your house, right?
I'm still in my house right now.
Okay.
But
and when did this process start?
September
20th. Ed. When did this process start?
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, when did the process start? Did you say 2013?
That's the first foreclosure that was voluntarily dismissed. So this process
started in
2017, and the sale is actually on the 12th, this Thursday.
Okay. Look at
right.
People need to understand what's going on. This process to do non-judicial foreclosures take a long time. And the more the people that are in those houses fight back, they just throw the kitchen sink at them, everything they can, and they'll hit a little here and hit a little there. So the more you fight back, the longer the process goes. They take baby steps, okay? One little baby step forward, okay? And they do something, and you don't react properly to it. And so once a point of time goes by, and now the time is acquiesced, and then they take the next little baby step. And they keep doing that over and over. Meanwhile, you're fighting in court. You may be caught throwing a few wrenches in some of their things. And that's why it takes years. So people need to understand when they go to court on things like this and it takes years, it means that they can't lawfully do it. And they're trying to get you to acquiesce. You know, look at the IRS has a lot of things they do to get you to acquiesce. They do all kinds of tricks and stuff. I've seen all the papers coming out, and I see what they're doing. I understand exactly what they're looking to do. They need a place to hang their hat. They need a footing, and they keep looking for it. And until they get it, they really can't do too much to you. But they get almost everybody because they're full of a lot of tricks. And they trick people into doing things, or they trick people into doing nothing. They wear you down with paper after paper after paper after paper. And what happens is people stop answering. If they answer and respond back, they usually respond back in anger and telling them they don't have the power, the authority. Maybe they go and read the Constitution, find a few things, and it's not constitutional. Make a look. They don't care what you're saying there. That's not the point of their paperwork. They're getting you to acquiesce. They're getting you to write a paper to make a statement, and you don't rebut it. This is dirty, the way they do this whole thing. And they do it in a place where they don't have jurisdiction, no authority, no due process, nothing. And then eventually they'll get you into their court system, says the spider to the fly, you know, and you're done, you're stuck. So all of this is just evil fraud. That's all it is. And the IRS is the masters of this. And a lot of other processes that they learned from that. The most evil courts, and they do this in is the family courts. Nobody ever really challenges the family courts appropriately, you know. We've challenged them. We've had one family court issue physically, literally here in New York, where we were able to be thrown out of the court. And that was a win for us. And the guy got his child and had to work out the problems with his ex on their own, and the court was gone, okay? Nobody escapes from the court, okay? But it's a game. We saw the game. We see what they're doing. And they couldn't deal with us, and they felt at risk, so out you go. And so that's a rarity. And to fight those cases, you have to physically go into the court and make the positions. But you could do it with paperwork also from outside, challenging jurisdiction, for they don't have that jurisdiction. They're in jurisdictions unknown. And you move it along, and you can win on that level. But again, you're going to have to end up taking into federal court to win on that level. And even there, you know, they want to maintain status quo. And if they see you don't know what you're doing and they don't feel like you're at risk and they see the acquiescence taking place point after point, then all of a sudden you find that you've lost. But mostly because of ignorance. And we're all ignorant to this process and this law and how things work, and we have to learn. And it's a shame that we have to learn about evil, how evil works. But that's where we're at this moment in time.
I definitely agree, John. I think you're going to enjoy this. So it was after the bankruptcy process, once that was dismissed, that I ran across your site and was quite appreciative of that because it gave me another avenue to work from. So just as you say, you know, learning and understanding the Constitution, AMS jurisprudence, the Federalist Papers, all those things, I have quite a ways to go, but that really opens the door and allows you to see quite a bit and see a lot clearer. Every time I would dig into the law in one direction or another, that's where I would always land. And so it made sense just to dig in even further, and that's what I appreciate about what you guys are doing, is you are providing that information, that education, and that drive for people to look at. So thank you. Following through with what legal action that I've taken is then, first off, I filed my own show cause denial jurisdiction, and that was done August 9th. And so that actually was filed in the court on August 9th. And just so you know, you're probably familiar with the court itself in an offhand way. It's Deschutes County with Shane Nelson. So from the Lavoie investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that same county, same court. So I filed my denial of jurisdiction, which they did place the motion in record. It's on the docket. And then following through with Jim, which Jim's awesome, great to work with, been really good, and got my joinder filed. So that all got mailed in. The court and everyone received it on the 26th of August. And just today I was corresponding with the court, and what they sent back to me as their proof of filing, the timestamp filing, was the notice of motion and the brief as being filed, but not the actual motion itself. So I'm curious as far as whether or not I should press them on that or not, and also with the, to getting to the questions, also with the my challenge of jurisdiction is that should I wait about 3 days or so to file for the default, or should I file
You filed for a joinder. Did we do an amicus curiae?
Yes. So
the amicus curiae was a challenge of the jurisdiction, and because you're in jurisdictions unknown, and the point that you're not getting due process, and that's what that's all about, and we're giving them 30 days to respond, and or they can fix the matter, restore the person, restore you, and everything, and everybody could be happy. Of course, they're not going to be happy, and they don't
right.
want to give up. They didn't get the memo yet that the deep state is being taken out. They had protection. They're maintaining the status quo, and they have had protection. But that protection is falling away. Okay, the day is coming. It's going to happen this fall where all that protection is going to be totally gone. And that's when the people are going to have the leverage in the court. And that's why at that point in time, we really need to have, critical mass. And so let me just call out again the point, anybody that can get us an interview with anybody anywhere, particularly Liberty groups, places that have a large audience, YouTube, places like, X-22 Report that has a large following, the Patriot Movement, any of those things, or conservative radio, constitutional radio, patriot radios, whether they be, fixed in a particular location, a state and county or whatever, or on the Internet, any of those things. We need to get the message out because that's how we're going to build the membership, because the people listening to those programs, involved with those movements, have already got somewhat of an education. They already understand the deep state. They already understand that there's a conspiracy to destroy America. They already see that Trump is doing good things and we're getting it back. But now they need the other message, that they have to give consent to their government, and that's what we teach. And they're not even aware of that. What consent of government even means. But we'll teach them that, and that's getting that message out. We'll give us that critical mass with people that are educated, and that's what we need.
Definitely. So I'm in the process of waiting for the court to actually enter that motion. So should I worry about them entering it as a filed document, because what they actually used was the brief. They didn't
file
it.
Well, look, they broke the law. When they returned that paper to you, they broke the law, okay? So the next move, what we planned to do was called the notice of crime. I think we're going to pass that one. We're going to bypass that. We may execute it right now, but we're eventually going to bypass that part. Because I want to combine the amicus curiae with a notice of crime, should they do A, B, or C, inside the amicus curiae. Because now we see what they're doing and how they're reacting to it, so let's add it into that. So when they send it back, then we can just move to moving it into the federal court for cause, so we can kind of bypass a step. But we'll see what we're doing. I told Jim we're going to work on this tomorrow. We're going to go through the paperwork and see how we can sort of make some changes in that and what we're going to do with the cases that are already moving, how we're going to, approach that and move on that. But they will always default. They'll always be bold. They'll always break the law. They're busy lining their pockets and getting power and getting high off power and authority and all that other stuff, and their house is about to come down.
So I should proceed with my own default judgment then, the affidavit of default judgment for the...
In order to give an affidavit of default judgment, you have to wait 30 days from the date of filing. And you said, what was it, the 26th we filed?
Well, actually, so I filed my own. On my own, I used your forms, which I appreciate.
Oh, okay, yes. If it passed 30 days plus some grace time, I'd say 35 days from the point you mailed it out.
Okay.
Do an affidavit of default. Make sure Jim gets a copy of that. And
okay.
Because you did do the joinder, right?
I did the joinder second. So I did my own challenge of jurisdiction first,
okay,
and then Jim and me walked through the joinder process.
So you got all that. You're getting them to the default. We don't even have to go to the notice of crime. The next move after that, because they're gonna can your papers. They're gonna ignore you and just move on and continue to do all their evil. But that's okay. You know, look at, let them do what they want. They're burying themselves. They're just putting more nails in their coffin. Because the next move is bringing them into the federal court. And we don't even care if they deny that and ignore that. We don't care. We're just going to go forward. We're going to make the ruling, and that's going to be sealed and filed. And still nothing's going to be done, maybe. And we're going to file another one and 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 so on. And the weight is going to be overbearing to them. And then they're falling apart in Washington. Court cases are going to start opening. Indictment's going to be applied. Big people are going to go down. The United States, they're going to go into cardiac arrest when they see what's going on behind the scenes, you know, the common people who have no clue what's really going on. And, you know, it's so serious that Norman Dodd, who was... He was an individual that was the lead counsel in the Reese Committee back in 1950s. I think it was 1950 when he came up with the conclusions. The conspiracy that was taking place in this country through the trusts that were being developed by all these rich people. And the woman that was working with him, a secretary, when she was, you know, recording all this stuff and putting it into the filings and stuff for the report and gathering all the information, typing all this stuff up, she got so frightened, Norman Dodd said that she literally lost her mind. The fear of what she saw, what was really driving America and where America was heading to and what the end results of the life in America was going to be. That's how bad and how serious it is, and that's going to be revealed. We have the Norman Dodd report, and portions of it has been removed from history. We can't find it anywhere. We don't have the full report. We do have the partial part of the report, and we do have it up online. But the real, real serious part has been removed. Congress removed it. Congress removed it. And expunged it from existence. I don't know if there's the actual report anywhere to be found anymore. So, but nevertheless, we know the evil, what's there. And anybody, you know, look at, we cover this evil in this whole process, and even the Norman Dodd interview and Norman Dodd report, we cover that in our civics course, which is 120 hours. And anybody goes through that course, I'm telling you, you will understand exactly how they did what they did and how America ended up to where we're at, okay? And the next story after that is a Donald Trump story. But we got to move on.
I'll look into that.
Caller in a couple of minutes, okay, Brian?
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Okay, we only got a couple minutes left, but we'll take our next caller, Drew. From Pennsylvania.
Yeah, hi, John. Yeah, how you doing, John?
Hey.
I don't know what I talked to you about last, I think last week or the week before, but I had to go back to court on this protection from abuse with this judge, and this is like the fourth time we've been to court with this already. We had a custody hearing come up, but they continued that until after the
right.
abuse. And honestly, I never touched anybody. I never did anything. You know what I mean? I never did anything to them. And that's why I've been so adamant about it. You know what I mean? That's the reason, because they treat you like you're guilty when you haven't done anything. So last time I was in.
They're a CPA case, right?
What do you mean?
Or a family court or something.
Well, it's considered a protection from abuse, but and one reason she's claiming that is because she gets a free lawyer and she has that, law.
Well, they love to give everyone free lawyers because they get so much money from the government, the local government, the state government, the federal government, and then the whole thing is all money. They get money from all the participants, and it just goes on and on and on. And the lawyers make money, the judges make money, everybody's lining their pockets. It's a real cash machine.
It's
even bigger than, believe it or not, and this is the sick part of it, it's even bigger than traffic.
Oh, yeah. I believe it is. Well, I mean, I know that lawyer doesn't like me because I did get a lawyer that came in, which I don't even think I'm going to use him really, but I got a lawyer came in for the custody hearing. And when he got there, the other attorney, she didn't even have my wife in there or anything. She said, oh, we're just going to continue it because of the PFA. And then he comes out, he told me, he says, wow, she really doesn't like you. I said, she has no reason to like me. I said, she accosted me in the hall three times, and she said slanderous things about me. So, you know, I said, she might be used to people putting up with that. I said, but I don't put up with that. I said, so that's why she doesn't like me. So, you know. That's the way it is.
All right, well, let me ask you, do you have a question or anything? Because we're beyond our time. We've got one other caller on the line.
Yes, I need to know what I need to do, because I got to go in there on the 18th here. And I know you talked about challenging jurisdiction already.
That's the only thing you could do. You can win on challenging jurisdiction.
I don't know if I told you, but the judge got a little ticked off of me because she's telling me I agreed to the 3 months temporary PFA continuance. I didn't. And I pulled out the transcripts to prove it, and she didn't want to. Well, she didn't like I had the transcripts.
They're evil. Did you challenge jurisdiction yet?
I did not challenge jurisdiction, no. But I mean, I was just going to.
If you're going to do a pro se, challenge the jurisdiction, let it go through the process. She's going to come back out and rule, and you're going to go to court, and she's going to say, well, you're going to say, judge, you get my paper? Yeah, I got your paper. I challenge jurisdiction. It needs to be decided. Yeah, I already decided, and I'm going to give you my ruling today or now or tomorrow. I'll write it, whatever. And you're going to say, well, how can you, your response to them when they rule that they got jurisdiction is, jurisdiction once challenged has to be decided, which means there's got to be a hearing, which means it requires two sides. And since you only got my side, the only way you can decide on this case, because the other side is brain dead and they acquiesced, well, you know what? I'm moving to court. You can only go according to my affidavit and my filing, and you have to decide for me because you don't have a choice. And of course, she's going to overrule and say, nah, I'm going to make my decision, and then, you know, she's biased. Well, judge, you have to recuse yourself. You just proved that you're biased. You already believe you've got jurisdiction. And you're ignoring all the facts of the case here and all the papers before the court. And again, they're going to go.
Can I file anything for that to recuse her or something? Because she did prove she biased already on the transcripts. You know, I mean, on the transcripts.
Listen. They're changing the transcripts? They're changing the words?
No. I have the transcripts, but I said there's proof on there that you're biased already on the transcripts.
You want to get all the transcripts. You want to get this interaction with her in the courtroom or get those transcripts because that's all your proof of the facts that, you know, now you go back and sue her later. But right now you're interested in shutting this case down. And,
I don't want to get the PFA because it'll be 3 years on my record, and I'm a constable, and I don't need that. And her
again, restoring. You have to be restored. All of that, look at everything they've done was unlawful. It's all got to be unraveled, undone. They don't have a choice in the matter.
I know, but she's trying to make me lose my house now, so I'm selling everything. I've been selling everything I got, and I'm trying to get another place because.
Let me get back to what I'm saying. You challenge the jurisdiction, you go through the process. It's never going to be, they're not going to move it to another court. You're out of court, but the next step over is the Supreme Court or the state court, shall I call it, in the county.
Well, what, if I do if she puts a three-year PFA on me for not doing nothing, and I can't see my granddaughter, I haven't seen my granddaughter since April.
And then you either give in and acquiesce or submit and continue, or you get up and fight and take the challenge. You know, I don't want to tell you.
No. I mean, she knows already I'm not going to acquiesce. She knows that already because actually the judge has just started to back down now.
This is a constitutional issue. Jurisdiction unknown, they're taking you into, and you're not getting due process. That's a constitutional issue. But again, I told you before, you know, last time we spoke, and I'm telling you again, you have to understand what's going on when you go into that federal court. Because that judge is looking to get rid of this case, number one. He wants to rule status quo, number two. And if you don't make him worried about what you know and where you're going with next, and he sees that you're quick on your feet and they do this and you do that. They do this and you do that.
The other attorney came out with slanderous statement, and I objected to it. The judge ignored it, and then the sheriff had to tell me to shut up four times, and I told him I'm there defending myself.
That's all. It doesn't matter. It's all on the record. That's fine. You're not in the court that you really want to be in. The court that you want to get into is the federal court.
Right.
You
exactly.
want to get in there and put that guy in a box. And
right.
and if that
well, the lady,
you
the lady,
if the judge gets put into a box, one of two things are going to happen. Okay. He's going to go back to the other side and tell him, make a deal. I want this out of my courtroom because I'm telling you right now, I'm going to have to rule for this guy. You know,
right.
he's going to force them to make a deal with you. And now right. if they come to make a deal with you, you need to understand that you got the whole upper hand. You want it exactly
yeah,
the way you want it.
They tried making a deal twice, and they denied it twice. They said, I didn't do anything, so we'll continue.
No. You're not listening, though. There's a difference. If you go to federal court and they come to make a deal with you, they understand
oh,
they're going to lose.
Yeah, I understand. That's different, yeah.
And you can ask for the moon at that point. Moon or nothing, because we're going back to court. I want the moon. Here it is. And that's it. You need to be restored back to the original state prior to their interference in
before
your life.
Damages, right. Before damages, yeah.
Well, that I got to move to the next caller. It's beyond our time, and I got
to
move
to caller. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. All right.
Okay, thanks a lot, Drew. Okay, last caller for the night we're going to take. It is Scott. Go right ahead, Scott, from, was it Georgia?
Yes, name's Scott from Georgia. My question is, on the joiner form in the attorney section part of it, I was wondering if I could use the state attorney general and the county district attorney general for the attorneys, because the court will not answer me, will not give me no attorneys' names or anything. So I'm
well, what kind
to
of case? A traffic case?
Yes.
Well, then what you do is you go to the county attorney, okay? And you know what I did, because they wouldn't give me that either on a traffic case I was dealing with for myself. And so I said, well, okay, fine. You don't want to tell me who the traffic DA, whatever they want to call him, it doesn't exist. They just hire a lawyer, okay, and he makes believe he's a prosecutor in the traffic court. That's all he is. They wouldn't give me that person's name or address or anything. They would file a paper. So what I did is I filed it with the county, okay, and what I did was I challenged jurisdiction, and I filed it with the county attorney as the prosecutor for that town court. And that person responded back, well, this isn't my case. I'm not in this jurisdiction. You need to be talking to the prosecutor, the person who handles the traffic cases, and they gave me the name and address. Now I had a name and address.
To do the joiner form.
That's the only way you're going to get it from these people, because they know they're committing a crime. When they're silent, when they have a duty to speak and they're silent, fraud is going on.
Yeah, because I've made several filings here in Norman.
That's silence is proof of fraud.
Yeah, they're ignoring me. So, but I'm trying to get the joiner form done. Could I put those two?
If you're moving it in, then put the county prosecutor on as the individual. You will get a letter back from them, and they will tell you that I forwarded your paper over to the prosecutor who is handling your case, because this office is not handling it. And that's fine. now you follow up with that with the other side to let it be known that you know that the case has been forwarded to them from the other prosecutor. And by the way, let me serve you directly. So here is a copy of the case. They'll do that rather quickly. When they get the paper, they'll do that within days to a week.
Okay. So I can use the county attorney?
Prosecutor until you can get the name of the proper person.
What about the state attorney general?
Nah, stay away from that.
Okay, leave him alone. Okay, yep. I'll use that county. And I wanted to say, you was speaking earlier about wanting to try to get a hold of folks. There's some folks on YouTube that when you go to YouTube in the search bar, you can type in Auditing America, and there are several folks across the United States that have their own YouTube channels that go out every day, and they come in contact with police that violate rights, and they're getting it on camera. And there's a few guys there in New York that's might be close that y'all might be able to get in contact with, because they're
Look at if anyone sees listens into a YouTube channel that does some good stuff, they're patriots, they kind of understand what's going on, they see that Trump is doing a good job trying to bring America back. These are the people that are involved, and if you make first contact with them, usually you go to their main page on the channel, and usually you can get a message to them there. Or, you'll see their website has been listed. You go to their website and you look for the contact there. And usually they don't want any contact other than email contact. And they don't even like regular email contact. They use like a form on their site or something, or a form that you fill out on YouTube. But make first contact, give them your name and a phone number and an email address, asking them and tell them about National Liberty Alliance and be brief and what they're doing, and make that first contact. Once you get that first contact, then you pass it on to the national leadership, and you let them know that I'm going to pass this on to the national leadership, because they've got a little bit of an interest if they responded back, and they maybe looked at our site and whatever. And you get it to the national leadership, which is Jen. You'll find him on the directory page. He's on the top of the page. He's the national leader. And you get that information to him. Then Jen will make contact directly from National Liberty Alliance, and then schedule an interview with for myself with Gerard, and we'll go talk. And now we'll have the platform to get out our message to as many patriots as possible. Then some of them will come get educated and become part of what we're doing, and realize that this is where the power and the authority is right here.
Exactly.
What we're teaching. Okay.
I appreciate it. Yes, sir.
Okay, we appreciate that. And anybody that can get us an interview somewhere, let's do it. Let's get this going. We get it out our message. We're going to grow. We're going to hit that critical mass. Critical mass is key. Anybody who has a case that's joining with us, you should be active in trying to get us critical mass, because it is pertinent to the success of your case.
Yes.
And because it's the success of all our cases. It's the success of we the people. By getting it out to help us get critical mass, to have that pressure, along with what Donald Trump is doing and many others in government are doing, and what we're doing, and all that pressure with critical mass and papers and revealing, and they're losing their protection, the status quo, the holding is going to change, and that's when people are going to get restitution. That's when we the people are going to take back control. And that's when we're going to have government by consent. And we're poised for it. We've developed everything we needed to develop. We've done everything we needed to do, except for getting more people. Okay? We are poised for that success right now.
So, I heard that. Sounds good. I appreciate the advice.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. Okay, that brings us to the end of our program. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. And everybody should get up there and read that paper on the indictment for Judge Kahn. Like I said, we're probably going to read that next week. And we are writing another paper. As long as it's short, we'll read two papers next week. But we'll do it one after the other. I don't know. I don't want to spend too much time reading. I'm not a good reader to begin with, but, you know, but we want to get the message out, and we want to teach people. And people need to be reading these things on their own slowly, looking at the footnotes, and really getting an education from these papers. Okay, good night. Godspeed. See you next time. Thank you.